Welcome aboard, you people. Starship Rokan Show. With Anna DeVon. Yes. For another day. Broadcast insolence. All right.
Another day.
Let's talk about. First of all, I would like to congratulate Lauren, Kevin, and myself on bringing home a victory last night at the United Center.
I know. It's like the magic of the White Sox that we had.
Yep. We needed a victory last night, and between the three of us, well, really kind of the two of you, because you were sitting in the seats most of the time. I had other duties.
Yeah, but me and Kevin were there on, what was it, Thursday? Friday? Thursday.
Oh.
Today. Well, we all were there Thursday, right?
Right.
We did the home opener, and it did not work. Yeah. That was disappointing.
So
they won their third game of the season when you guys were there.
They actually won their first game of the
first
season.
First game of the season.
This is the first. Yeah. They won.
They have 3 points now.
Right.
Right, but the third game is the first one they won. That's to make it confusing. But they lost the first in Prague. They lost the home opener. They won the third game.
Right.
So they're on a roll.
I think this is the fourth game, because Saturday.
Right.
Wait, it's the fourth game?
Yeah, Saturday we lost two.
Stop.
Oh, all right.
All right, play the theme again.
Let's hear it.
Play the theme again. We're going to start over.
Take two. Take two.
All right. I'm telling you, when we put this podcast up.
It's going to be great.
Welcome aboard, you people. It is the Starship Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis on for another day of broadcast insolence.
Go Hawks!
Yeah, go Hawks!
Yay!
Glad, glad the Hawks won last night. All right.
Terrific.
Ro, you forgot my congratulations.
Oh, boy.
Did they come back to win that game?
Oh, they did.
That, of course they did.
We might have been sitting in the secret bar when that happened last night.
Yeah, it looked like that was going to be impossible to come back for the Packers, but it happened.
I don't want to talk about it. All right, let's talk about this. You know what I want to talk about?
What do you want to talk about?
I want to congratulate, I would like to welcome Felicity Huffman to the federal penal system.
Oh, that sounded bad. Even worse than it is.
She had to report to the Dublin Federal Correctional Center in California today.
She did.
Where she's going to spend 14 days. Now, she did everything she was supposed to do. She married William Macy.
He dropped her off today, in fact.
She was in a bunch of decent shows, and she apologized for what she did.
She did, and for that she was rewarded with a 14-day sentence, of which she has to serve the whole thing because it's a federal prison, but 2 weeks in a low-security prison that Forbes actually says is one of the top 10 prisons.
Forbes.
That you would want to go to if you should happen to go to a prison. That's what, you know, consult Forbes and find out where, you know, the best time served can happen.
Do they have like a white collar crime section in Forbes?
I think
they do. Because, you know, if you read Forbes, you're likely to actually commit some sort of securities fraud of some sort at some point.
Good to know.
I like to picture Macy like, okay, bye, honey, make friends, see you in 2 weeks.
Dropping off at camp.
Yeah, like waving. Love you. God, you're
kisses.
We'll send letters.
And now he knows where she is for 2 weeks. That's, you know, I mean, think about that. You know, William H. Macy.
Right.
Just saying. All right. So there you go. She's going to be there now for the next 2 weeks. I have no idea what these other people who are facing charges, like
Lori Loughlin.
Lori Loughlin,
right,
who
probably.
Wants Aunt Becky wants to, like, take these guys to federal court, and she's going to lose, and she may spend the rest of her life in prison before she's done. She's not going to be doing, you know, in a Forbes, you know, top 10 list of prisons. They're going to send her to, you know, Orange is the New Black. It's going to be her deal.
She's fighting it, and she won't be rewarded for that if she is found guilty. But,
right.
You know, Felicity Huffman, 2 weeks, you know, she can just kind of, I guess, do her time. She says she's doing her... what she's supposed to do, and she's just going to buy the time and get out of there. I mean, it is prison, even if it is called one of the cushiest prisons in America. It still is prison. Ain't fun. Ain't fun.
Here she is, playing the harmonica her first day after the slammer slams.
Oh, jeez. She's already got a tattoo.
Right. Exactly.
She got the teardrop out of her eyes.
She's going to shave her head. Ripped off her sleeves.
I'm your roommate, Pinky. Oh, God, not Pinky. These are my rules. You can do what I tell you to do.
She's working on getting ripped like Blago.
Right. Where's the gym? Wait, is she going to do free weights? First thing is free weights.
They have a picture that the San Francisco Chronicle put out video of this prison from the outside, and there's a tennis court. Now, it doesn't look like, you know, a country club tennis court, but it's a tennis court, and they have a track, and I guess they're allowed to do.
Yeah, go around the track. All right, so
on the track.
Here's now. Here are some. If she goes to the commissary
mm-hmm.
on her first day, like you know, like when you go to college, you go to the bookstore, you pick up your stuff, right?
Yeah.
Or you go to the Walgreens or whatever, and you pick up all the stuff for the you know. I gotta get the room together. She can get either regular coffee or Taster's Choice. Taster's Choice, though, that's $7.80.
What?
Yeah.
That is crazy.
The regular coffee is $2.70. These are bags of coffee.
Oh, okay.
All right. She can get a book of forever stamps, which that would be depressing in prison to go buy forever stamps, wouldn't it? If you're in prison, you want to just buy the short-term stamps that are like, I don't know if it's going to go up or not. It's
the month of November, yeah. And we celebrate, you know, things.
Get the stamps that match your sentence.
non-dairy creamer, $1.80. You can get that. Now, chocolate bar. You're wondering, what does a Hershey's chocolate bar go for in prison?
Yeah, I wonder what that is.
I feel like a lot.
Do they gouge them in prison?
Yeah, they're always traded.
$1.70.
Oh, that seems kind of normal.
No, I think that seems high.
Squeeze cheese, sharp cheddar.
That sounds dangerous.
I know. That's
we should compare all these prices to Mr. Patel's downstairs to see. Because he's the master at this sort of shop. You know, where you can get everything you need to cover
call
you
him.
For
can
2 weeks.
Call him? He's listening now.
He's listening.
Somehow, I wish you just have a microphone down there for him. Find out how much this actually works on our. Let's see, oatmeal cream variety $3.15. These all sound like things that are like code in prison. We're gonna give you the squeeze cheese sharp. Oh no, Pinky! Please, not the squeeze cheese sharp. Oatmeal cream variety. Oh no! I don't need the oatmeal cream variety. No! I'm good. How about a vanilla wafer? No! I'm fine. I'm just gonna take a nap. I'm just gonna lie down and I'm gonna take a nap and I'm gonna. I'm very sorry that I cheated to get my daughter into a really good college.
I never went to college.
Pinky, what are you in for?
Triple murder.
Oh, gosh.
I liked it.
Let's see, baby powder. Oh, she can't. Now, the baby powder, that's a buck. You can't have baby powder now.
Why not?
Because doesn't that cause cancer? I mean, that's
still available in prison.
If I'm Mike Monaco, I'm suing the prison system for, you know, stress inducement through baby powder. Oh, Noxema is $2.20. Does it seem right?
It depends what size. That seems not terrible.
Antiperspirant, white.
As
what is that?
To
what is that?
Instead of the clear on gel.
Oh, okay.
Oh,
which
okay.
She's not going to like because she's going to get the white smudge on her prison gear and everything. It's a bad look.
Yeah. Well, that's. I mean, you just want. I just want to make sure that wasn't like a. That's some sort of a segregation thing that goes on in the prison. Let's see here. Dial soap, $1.05.
Okay.
Lever 2000. Right. Neutrogena is $3.40. She's going to go for the Neutrogena, don't you think, at the commissary in the prison?
Squeaky clean kind of thing?
Oh, yeah. That's extra.
Squeaky clean.
Uh-oh.
That's what we're doing next.
No. No. I don't need... I'm fine. Let's see here. AAA batteries, 4-pack, $1.45. Now, that's a deal.
Yeah.
What do you need batteries for?
Legal size pad, $1.35, and envelopes, $1.95 for 50. You know what? It might even be worth it. Think about this. Think about the money you pay for envelopes and stuff. Might be worth it to go to prison just for the savings. Seems to me that you're getting an incredible deal here.
You can stock up for all the Christmas cards you're going to send out.
The close-up toothpaste is $1.50.
Okay.
Reasonable.
Please use the close-up, too. Right after we're done with the cheese squeeze.
Gas X. You might want to get that.
Oh,
that's $5.60.
Necessary.
Yeah, you don't want...
You might need that with the prison food.
Right, and you don't want to upset Pinky in any way, shape, or form. See, triple antibiotic ointment. You're going to need that. I'm stocking up on that. That's $4.40. Carmex, $1.70. Chapstick, $2.
Wow. That seems.
See, that's about right. Acne treatment, $160. Hemorrhoid ointment, $385.
You're going to need that.
Oh, no. No, 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 no. Oh. No, 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 Pinky. All right. There you go. That's for the first. Now she's just going through the commissary as, you know, Felicity Huffman.
Thoughts and prayers.
Yes.
I'm looking at the prisoner handbook for the Dublin Federal Penitentiary, yep. And you apparently have certain shopping hours when, and only then are you allowed to go to the commissary.
Oh.
In order to do your shopping. There's like a Tuesday, Wednesday thing. They do alphabetically. And so you've got like a very limited window.
See, H. Huffman, it's Tuesday. I think she's going to make it.
Yeah, she might.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're probably going, you know, A through L or something like that, or A through K.
Oh, but your list has to be turned in by 6 a.m. that shopping day. So no luck. She's going to skip this one.
There's always next week for medicated chest rub at $2.40.
Yeah.
All right. Get two tubes of that.
We're checking in now with Ben Bradley after we check in first with Lauren Lapko. What's happening on the roadways?
He's not a Bears player, but he makes the cut. How Lawrence Funk won the spot at Hallis Hall for a shave and a haircut. Wednesday's cover story on WGN TV News at 9 o'clock.
Oh, look at that.
Lawrence Funk.
Speaking of that, here is Ben Bradley from the WGN TV Newsroom.
Hey, guys. Good to be with you.
Hello,
hey.
Ben.
Hi, hello.
Ben. Ben, oh Ben, oh Ben, we just played Crazy Train there for a reason. You have a story about a Crazy Train, do you not?
Yeah, this was wild. So on Sunday morning, the morning of the Chicago Marathon, the CTA Blue Line coming into the city was unusually crowded because you had all the marathoners and their supporters on the train. Train stops at Cumberland, and a guy who's in town from the Boston area to run notices everyone's kind of running off the train. And wonders why. And he says, well, there's a guy with a gun who's robbing people on this train. So this 54-year-old guy goes back onto the train, confronts the robber, gets the gun out of his hand, and pins him up against the door.
Wow.
Until cops arrive. We got a hold of the video from onboard that train. One of the people who said they had been victimized by that robber started recording after this guy jumped in to help out, and it is wild to see.
Here's a little bit of the sound of it.
You don't move! You don't move! Go! Let me go! Go! No! Go! I'm not letting you go! I'm not letting you go! I'm not letting you go! Get down! Get down on the ground! Okay, you give me a police officer right now. I'm a boss, I'll break your head in one punch.
It matters to me.
Get down!
Wow, that is remarkable. And yes, he was
next
fine.
Stop Harlem, next stop Harlem.
No, really, nothing to see here. No big deal.
And you always love the CTA conductors with the ultimate understatement. Ladies and gentlemen, we're standing for police activity. There's a guy with a gun, and another passenger disarmed
him. Assaulting people.
Yeah, we're standing for police activity. You'll still have to pay full fare. And welcome to Chicago. Enjoy the marathon.
Next stop, Irving Park. Irving Park is the next stop.
But what was crazy when you see this video is this guy not only gets the gun out of the robber's hand, but is holding on to it when another passenger says, don't make this any worse. I think she was worried that, you know, they would start fighting and somebody would shoot or something like that. So this good Samaritan says, well, I don't know how to use this guy. I don't know where the safety is. Does anyone know how to put the safety on? Some other guy stands up and says, yeah, here, give me the gun.
Oh.
And so, thankfully.
In this town, I wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
I think with the guy with, you know, if I'm holding the gun, I'm holding the gun. And so, I'm not going to hand the gun to anybody else.
So we also hear from the good Samaritan who said, yeah, it just pissed him off that somebody would do this because even though he's from Boston, he loves Chicago.
How did he get the gun out of his hand?
Hit him on the arm. And got a hold of it. This guy, even though he's 54 years old, still continues to train. He said in high school and part of college, he was a Golden Gloves boxer.
Wow.
And he's got some moves. He's also got some lines, like in classic Bostonian fashion. At one point, the Good Samaritan says to the robber, I hit you 3 times in the head in under 1 second. As though he had timed it out at some previous time in his life.
He certainly sounds like he's taking command of the situation immediately. Was the guy struggling immediately, or did he get him?
We're seeing this on CLTV. What I love about it is that there's a woman who's just sitting there, you know, who's behind the little, this is by a door where this is all happening, and then there's a woman sitting behind the little wall next to the door, and she's acting like nothing is going on. Right. Although,
just another day on the train.
When the gun comes out and he's looking around for somebody to help him put the safety on, that's when the woman in red actually scurries away. What's remarkable to me is that there are at least a dozen other people on this train car.
Yep.
And not a single one of them steps up to help him subdue this would-be robber until he gets some help from the guy who apparently knew a little bit more about firearms.
More on this coming up at 4 o'clock
yes,
today.
Sir.
4 o'clock on the WGN TV News. Thank you, Ben.
Yep.
Appreciate it. We got the news on WGN Radio and Tim. Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. Night Court theme means that's Mike Monaco's new theme since Night Court doesn't need it anymore. All right. First of all, Mike, we were able to figure this out. I know this is near and dear to your heart. What are your clients in federal prison eating for dinner? We found out what Felicity Huffman is having tonight for dinner.
What's that?
Because she is checked in now to the Dublin Correctional Facility in Northern California.
Uh-huh.
Bay Area, California. Her lunch, so she got there this morning, you know, for intake.
Yeah.
So her lunch was a chicken patty, steamed rice, fruit, and drink.
Very okay. healthy. Mm-hmm. All right. You get to choose your drink, I guess. That's pretty nice.
I mean, she's only going to be there for 14 days. Is that right?
14 days.
Yeah.
Right. And then tonight on the dinner menu,
uh-oh.
I know you're wondering this.
Well,
tonight is pepper steak or lentils, steamed rice, green beans, and whole wheat bread.
Do they have a vegan option?
I'm sorry. Is there a vegan option here? I'm sorry. Pinky, could you help
me? The LA
with
people,
is there
they're
a
all vegans.
Vegan option? Hey, Crazy Eyes, come here. I met you in the commissary. I was buying the Gas X.
But we were looking, Mike, and this surprised me. Not it wouldn't surprise you, but Forbes magazine ranks the cushiest 10 prisons in America, and this is like third on the list.
Dublin is?
Dublin.
Uh-huh. What's number one, by the way?
Number one? That's what you might...
Actually, that's
right,
good.
Number
he
one.
He should know that.
I'm more interested in that.
It's federal prison camp Alderson, West Virginia.
West Virginia. I've been there.
The beautiful Allegheny Mountains.
Is it nice?
It's nice, but it's, you know, the trouble, I had a fellow there, and the trouble was, and he was in camp there, and every 10 minutes, excuse me, every hour, or like an hour and a half, there is a count. So you really don't forget that you're in prison, because every so many times a day, like six or seven times a day, you have to have a count. And that's one of the worst things about it, where there is no bar. There are no bars in Alderson, but because you've got to be someplace.
I would never be able to get somewhere without a bar.
You. Oh, please.
oh, you mean bar? Oh, like on the wall? Okay,
bars
I get
on the walls,
it. Yeah,
yes.
On the walls, yeah. All right. Okay.
Anyway. But they do have occupational programs like horticulture and cosmetology at Alderson. So they got
it's
that.
It's going to be hard to get a degree in horticulture in 14 days.
Yeah,
I'm just surprised at how inexpensive things are in the commissary.
That's what you're concerned with?
Yeah, I was like, you know, baby oil. Now, baby oil is expensive in the commissary because, you know what? It's in high demand.
$2.30. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I heard that just the other day somebody was sentenced to probation who was in that case.
Oh.
But they said that he got probation because he gave cash. I thought, why would that allow him to get probation rather than
because
do some time?
Couldn't prove it?
I guess it's not some sort of wire fraud, right?
No, it would just calling this fellow would be the wire fraud.
Yeah. See, he knows the law. Yeah. I don't. All right, because if you're the always with wings are $3.90, by the way,
God.
In case you need those.
Okay.
You know, God forbid, you know, out of 2 weeks, what are the chances?
Yeah.
All right, here we go. Let's talk a couple things. I want to get your thought because this is Mike Monaco. He's our legal analyst. He does all of the thinking for us when it comes to big federal cases. Big story today is that Rudy Giuliani got subpoenaed in this whole Ukrainian deal.
Yeah.
And he says he's not going to comply.
Really?
Yeah.
Subpoenaed by who?
He got subpoenaed by Congress.
Southern District of New York or Congress?
I believe it was Congress.
Well, Southern District, he better comply. With Congress, I mean, they're disputing. The executive branch is in the midst of a big dispute with the Congress that they are not going to comply with. They're claiming, well, that's what the president said in his letter, an eight-page letter by Cipollone, I think his lawyer,
mm-hmm.
that because it's not a real, for some, don't ask me why, But they said because it's not a real impeachment investigation, they need not.
Because it wasn't voted on.
Oh, that's right.
That's because it wasn't voted on. Right, now, that does not necessarily mean it's not real. That actually the courts would probably find that you can have an investigation. That Congress still has
the right
to oversee this. Yeah. But they should take the vote. I happen to agree with that. They should take the vote.
Okay.
And put everybody on the record and let everybody know. Because people are very afraid. There are some Republicans who don't want to get on the record here, right? Because there's some Republicans who are going to be in some tough fights throughout America against Democrats this year, and they don't necessarily want to be the one that said, "Oh no, everything's fine here."
That's a crime. What's criminal about this? High crime. It's not even a high crime,
right? So they don't want to get there. But
no.
But I think let's. I would take that off the table if I'm Congress, and I think if they're going to have this
by having the vote,
I think if you're going to do this, you just got to do it. You're either going to do it or you're not going
to
do it.
And Speaker Pelosi says it's not necessary, and that she'll just continue to go through the process, and this is okay to do it this way.
Right, but the optics are bad. I mean, it just goes to that whole the. I mean, Americans, we see now, we get it. We're not paying you. Those of us out here are not paying the level of attention with the legal analysis of a Michael Monaco to exactly what's going on here. Yeah. We just want to know if they're going to impeach a president of the United States, they should take a vote to start the investigation. That to me, that makes some sense. However, once you've started that, then these guys got to give up. They got to give in the information, right? They got to hand it over. Giuliani's not going to be able to sustain this. The courts are going to make him.
They have a picture, the New York Times and some of the national news media has a picture of the letter that Giuliani's attorney sent into Congress.
By the way, who's his attorney, does it say?
It says now former attorney. Nicholas Mitchell, is that? No, that's the name of the investigative counsel. I'm sorry, I don't see the person who signed it. It's John Sale.
John Sale, yeah.
Sale.
John Sale. Resigned the case today after this was,
which is it's all going well so far.
I'm out.
Well,
I'm out of here.
Now, wait a second. Now, Mike, you have famously resigned a few cases this year.
Exactly.
So
I got fired too.
Yeah,
Jussie
Smollett said, "Sorry, I don't like the way you're going in this whole thing."
I'm a victim.
So this is not Giuliani. It seems. Is going to have a problem here. Because the problem is not just with Congress. The problem, as you just rightfully mentioned, is with the Southern District of New York.
Yeah, they've already got his two associates that are in jail right now in New York because of the deal he was involved with in the Ukraine. And they got today's paper said he received $500,000 from them for that deal. So there's something there, apparently, but we'll see.
Right. Well, these guys are in jail for a reason.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They grabbed him up trying to get out of the country on one-way tickets.
At the airport.
Right.
I know. That's always a bad sign.
Right.
After you buy a one-way ticket. Wait a minute.
After having lunch.
Where are you going?
With Rudy Giuliani, of course, at Trump International, because you got to go there, right? Because I think the president asks for the receipts when you walk into their office. He wants to see.
What's the coupon?
Right.
He wants. It's a 25% coupon for that. Come on.
Did you have the fruit salad? Fruit salad's the best. All right. So, I guess, what do you make of this? What do you sense based on the little that we know about we know these guys are nefarious, but the little we know about the transactional piece of this case?
Yeah.
Do you get the sense that Rudy Giuliani is truly in trouble here legally?
Oh, yeah. I do. I mean, it's not, you don't take it to be a scholar to figure this out. The guy is involved with two folks who are now in jail.
Right. And fraudsters in Ukraine.
Fraudsters in Ukraine.
Right.
And there are
guys who are at the very center of the corruption prior to this new TV talk show host and birthday clown president of Ukraine.
Exactly.
Under the old regime, these were guys that the president says, I want to clean up the corruption over there. I want to make sure that we're not involved in it. And all of a sudden, within a week, you go from, well, Hunter Biden, he's a bad guy. And Hunter Biden, that certainly was a stupid thing that he did. But now all of a sudden you got your lawyer in the middle of it.
Yeah.
And that kind of takes away the argument about, who's investigating whom. If I'm the president, you know what I do? I go, listen, I not only was investigating Hunter Biden, I investigated Rudy Giuliani, too. I saw this.
Take credit for it.
And I throw it. You know what? He's got to go, too.
Yeah. Well, the question that is raised is who can the president pardon? by all of this?
Yes. And we're going to answer that question on the other side. Can the president pardon his own lawyer? We'll find out about that coming up. But first, Lauren Lapka's got the roadways covered. What's going on? News coming up in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on 720 WGN Chicago. Ro Khan Show with Anna DeVlantis. Here is Mike Monaco, our legal analyst. We were talking about Felicity Huffman, and then somehow we worked our way into poor Rudy Giuliani, who seems like he's having some legal problems. And now...
And he needs a lawyer. I'm not available.
No?
No.
Some highly controversial, notorious
people. He's conflicted on that case.
I've already represented one of the president's lawyers. It'd be inappropriate to represent two of them. I mean, really.
Is there a conflict with that? Can a lawyer do that?
It's problematic.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'd say it's problematic for you, Michael Monaco.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. More ways than one.
Yeah, since you represent Michael Cohen. Yes, yeah. I think that. And Michael Cohen and Rudy Giuliani don't get along, do they?
Yeah, no.
All right, so let me ask you about this. Yeah. Can the president pardon Rudy Giuliani for his actions in Ukraine?
So this is interesting. There's very little Supreme Court information on this.
Hasn't been done a lot, right?
No, hasn't been done much. Only this president is where you ask a question. If his lawyer is complicit with the president, can he then pardon this for his lawyer? Or can he pardon anybody for any reason?
Well, let's assume for a second here, because there doesn't seem to be any connection at this moment between Donald Trump, the president, and these other than pictures of them together.
Well, it's interesting. The only thing in the Constitution says that you can't pardon anybody involving impeachment. So it's interesting, in this case, if he is impeached, or if the allegation against him, which is whether he sought the help from the Ukraine to attack one of his rivals, and he involved Trump. Excuse me, if Trump involved Giuliani in that effort, which it sounds like he was doing, can that then make a problem for Giuliani to be pardoned by Trump?
Even if the pardon does not pertain to that particular criminal act,
but. You mean if he sends? Oh, I see.
Ukrainian guys may not be related to this at all.
Right? No, not at all. I don't think at all. But if that is still part of it, I mean, there's very little information. In 1974, the Berger Court gave pretty wide latitude to a president in terms of who he can pardon and who he can't pardon. But it would strike me that now. Of course, he can only be pardoned for federal crimes. We understand that. So,
right.
So if the state of New York decides to charge Rudy Giuliani, which is the Manhattan DA's office, the president can't help
Nothing
that.
Nothing he can do.
No. And the president's got a big problem now with the Manhattan DA's office. They just got it 8 years of his. There's order to get the federal Second Circuit just ordered.
The IRS to hand over
IRS or whatever 8 years of Trump's
tax returns. That's not going to be good.
Why has he fought so hard?
It's just not right.
Maybe the audit's not over.
Right.
Maybe the IRS audit never ended.
I just think that, you know what? I don't know that they're going to find anything illegal, because I mean, I'm assuming the IRS has been auditing him the whole time.
Yeah.
But I think what they're going to find is they're going to find some conflicts in there.
Yeah, I have no idea. I mean, we'll see. The question is this: can a president pardon anybody he wants to pardon? Can he pardon himself?
Can he? Yes.
Yes. And so
he says he can. He, by the way, said he could.
Yeah,
at a rally.
But that hasn't been tested.
It's not legal. What you say at a rally is not legally binding.
Yeah,
but okay.
Exactly. But that's the other question: can he pardon himself? Now, he can't pardon himself for impeachment, of course. You know, so if he gets impeached, he's impeached, and the pardon doesn't help that.
Right.
But can he pardon himself as he's leaving? I'm pardoning myself for any federal prior crime.
Right, because you can do that. You can do a blanket.
May or may not have committed.
How about any future crime?
That too.
You could do that too?
I don't think so. No, that's not right.
Handy.
Not a future crime.
No.
But you can pardon him for anything he committed, whether he's accused of it or not. It's just out there. Because that's the power of the pardon. The pardon power is immense.
Yes.
It's immense.
Well, it will be beyond fascinating to see if he does pardon Rudy Giuliani here. Because every legal analyst I've seen, and now you're the cherry on the sundae here, that says that this.
I would prefer a different metaphor.
That this is. Actually, that's what Felicity Huffman's new nickname is, Jerry on Sunday. and it's only Tuesday. Hello, did you see what I did there? No, I think that Rudy Giuliani has got a world of trouble in front of him here. I mean, you see, you know, Judge Napolitano, everybody talking about it today.
Even Judge Napolitano?
Judge Napolitano has been saying this for weeks.
Yeah, he's
well, that's why Shepard Smith had to quit.
Is that right? Because Shepard asked him, is it against the law for the president to do what he admits that he did? And Napolitano said, yes, it is.
Yes. Right.
There you go.
How dare you say something like that?
That's right.
Anyway, that's all right. So that's where we sit here.
Yeah, scary. Scary place to sit.
Yeah. I wonder, you know, if I could just bring this back to Chicago for a second, if you're Rob Blagojevich.
Yeah.
You think that right now it does seem like even my mom, who's a very passionate supporter of the president, even today, she said, you know, I think sometimes he just gets mad and does things that he shouldn't do. And then it's too late after he did it to undo what he did. So it's sort of, and I understand it because I'm sort of like that. I just get mad and I say things and I maybe shouldn't have said them. But that's kind of what he does. And I wonder, can you undo the things that you just did? And I'm like, okay, you got it about right. I got to go.
See you at Thanksgiving. It'll all be fine. Don't worry.
And how does that relate to Blagojevich?
Well, I'm wondering if he's going to go on like a wild sort of pardon
and
mission
just
here. Because, you know, that's a little bit of his genius. The president's genius is that he does a lot of things. He creates a lot of velocity in activity, and then you can't keep up with it.
That's
right?
True.
You forget
that's
about
true.
Things from 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, that's true.
So I would imagine he could throw a lot of stuff up there.
Yeah.
And I think that Blagojevich goes right in with that.
And he could not pardon Blagojevich, but just
commute
a sentence. Which he probably
should. Pardon him too, couldn't he?
He could.
You could pardon him for all the
really?
I mean it's really I know what yeah, would you? I guess
think
not.
So.
Yeah. I'm just saying that it's going to be an interesting couple of months here because he's gonna have to do something. Because the Ukraine thing, we're off. We're kind
of counting on it.
Well, we've moved on the Ukraine thing from one thing to the other here. We've moved from the Ukraine and trying to pressure the president and holding the money and all that and whatever they're looking at in Congress. But then he's got this. He's got these two guys who look like they're from Central Casting, you know, who are sitting there with the bald heads and everything. And then like, where are they?
They look like clients.
Yes, they do. They should hire Mike Monaco, attorney at law. We got the WGN News coming your way from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom at 2. Anna, where did you go to university, as they like to say in England?
College.
Yeah.
I went to Northwestern, as you know.
You went to Northwestern.
Go Cats. Thank you, Kevin.
And Northwestern is, where is that?
It's right here. Right over there, by there. Right there.
Yeah,
you
uh-huh.
take the lake and you go left from
here.
Yeah,
just keep going. It's walkable. I mean, it's a long walk, but it's walkable from
people
here.
People ran how many miles on Sunday?
Right.
So sure, you could do it.
Oh, sure, easy. It's half that. It was like 12 miles up the lake or whatever it is. So that's Northwestern, right? Now, on Friday night, do you know what Northwestern's going to be doing?
No, I do not.
They are going to be playing football under the lights at Ryan Field.
That's so cool on Friday night?
Yes, on Friday night. A big national television game on Friday night against The Ohio State University. They are already 25-point underdogs in that game.
Oh. and I bet based on prior experience, there'll be more Ohio State sort of jerseys and memorabilia and people wearing colors for Ohio State rather than the purple in
the
stadium.
Well, if you are a Northwestern fan, this game has been sold out since it was announced, essentially, because I think in part of what you're talking about, I think there's also some Northwestern fans who'd like
Ohio interest
to see what goes on here, too, with Ohio State, top-ranked team, number 4 in the nation
right now.
They didn't play, and they slipped an ordinal, which I don't understand how that worked out. Of course, Akeem Hicks slipped an ordinal, too, and that's a totally different situation, isn't
terrible.
It?
Terrible.
So, after 5 o'clock, I have a 4-pack of tickets if you are a Northwestern fan, you're a Northwestern grad, you just like purple, and you'd like to go up there and see this spectacle on Friday night, because it's the first time they've done, I think it's the first time they've played on a Friday night.
I don't recall another time.
He played on Saturday nights, obviously, but I think this is it. So if you want to see this spectacle, it is happening. It is happening Friday night, and I've got tickets for you coming your way after 4, 5. It's after 4 now, after 5 o'clock. 4 o'clock Mountain.
Good luck.
All right. Now, let's talk. This a couple of weeks ago, we mentioned this, and I wanted to get more detail on it, but I wanted to wait for Lucianne Walkowitz from the Adler Planetarium to get back from her adventure. She went to Mars and back, and she had some things she had to go do. And so there was a story. Did you see that there was a headline that said, if science proves that there's life on Mars, can humans really deal with it? And Lucianne Walkowitz has an answer for that, which is, it turns out that this is a bit of a spoiler alert, but Lucianne, isn't there already life on Mars? Didn't we prove that in the 1970s?
Well, wait a minute. First of all, I can weigh in on the whole life on Mars things, but whether humans can actually deal with it, that's definitely another scientist's problem.
Yeah, that's my problem. That's a talk show host problem is what that is. Let's explain what they mean by that in terms of finding life, because there's a couple of different rovers that are going up there now that are going to be looking for to the building blocks of life, right? But we already found the building blocks of life there, did we not?
Well, that's the debate. So this debate has been going on since the mid to late 70s, and it stems back to the very, very first missions that landed on Mars, the Viking missions. Now, they were designed to look for life on Mars, and they had all of these different experiments that were intended to look that way, and ultimately, what happened is that one of them seemed to show some promise, and of the four of them, and then the other three didn't seem to show anything promising. And now the person who was in charge of the one experiment that came out with some promising results, even back then, had published that they were inconclusive, but still really believes that they had found signs of life, which is, you know, his right. Like, scientists go back and forth about results all the time, in which they debate whether they should be interpreted one way or another. But, you know, this has been going on forever and ever, is that, you know, people are really interested in finding life on Mars. And, you know, while we have a lot of hints that the environment on Mars might have been better for life in the past, we still don't really have that smoking gun, you know, thing waving at us.
So we might get it on these two new experiments that are landing within the next year, right? These two new probes are going up there, because the next probe is going to dig a little deeper into the surface to try to get below, right? Because there's a very significant dust layer over at Mars, is there not?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Mars is, I think, mostly dust. So the future rovers and landers that are going up there, one of the things that people are really interested in doing is not just the kinds of limited experiments that you can do when you have, you know, these rovers are basically like roving science labs. It's like a little robotic science lab on wheels. And what they would like to be able to do is to actually bring some samples of the Martian soil and, you know, like digging down a little bit deeper into that that Martian turf and actually bring that back. It's really, really expensive to do that. And so one of the plans right now is for some of these future missions to create little caches. So in other words, to like fill up its little container with dirt from Mars and then leave it there for a future mission, possibly one involving human beings, to go and pick it up. And that's because when you have a human in the mix, they have all of the, you know, much more capable ability to use like the full suite of like laboratory experimentation to try and understand, you know, what that sample means and what it contains, instead of the very like small experiments that you can do, even though they're very clever experiments, the very small experiments you can do with a robot that's designed to do, you know, one or just a couple of things. So, you know, ultimately, like, in the past and in the future, it's still, like, scoop up some of the dirt and figure out whether
is there anything moving in there?
Life in there.
Hey, John, is there something moving in there?
What's going on? Lucianne, what would you say, is it a top priority for NASA to explore alien life? How high of a priority is it, and why? What do you think is the reason for that? Why is it prioritized the way it is?
Well, you know, I think that it's prioritized that way in part because, you know, NASA is really the people's space program. You know, you're, you know, albeit it's pennies, but the amount of taxes that you pay every year, you know, some of that goes to fund all of these NASA missions. And the NASA missions that you fund, like that data, those things that we learn, you know, those belong to the American people. You know, so I think that in part the reason that finding life in the universe and off of Earth is so dear to everyone's heart as a research topic is that it's something that everybody wonders about. You know, when I'm out on the floor in the Adler, like, people ask me about it all the time. So it's something that's a scientific research question, but it's also something that I think is very much a human question.
Yeah.
I mean, the chances that with all, especially now that we are looking further and further and further into deep space, and we're seeing much more than we even possibly imagined was out there. I mean, I guess we sort of had this notion of infinity, right? That this, who knows if there's an end to any of this.
Mm-hmm.
But there is certainly now solar systems that look more similar to us than we've seen before. And we're getting good looks at those. So the question really is a matter of probability, right? That could we possibly be the only, and with these billions and billions and billions of stars out there, could we be the only life, let alone intelligent life? I mean, it just doesn't seem likely. No. And then you wonder about the whole idea of it's sort of rock hopping that, you know, even the most basic forms of life must be doing as they're moving around on, you know, meteors or whatever it happens to be, you know, fragments of other planets, and, you know, they're landing in other places. So, you know, that's, I know it's an existential crisis for some people in terms of, you know, what is humanity? Why is humanity different? It certainly peaks at a number of different religions in a way that obviously those leaders are going to look at you and go, well, no, that's not how we understand humanity. But that's the question that's really being asked, right? Which is, can humans deal with the fact that our origin story, at least as it's told in the, you know, sort of the Judeo-Christian way, it may not be 100% accurate, or at least you'd have to do some pretty fancy interpreting of it to be able to make that fit, right? And then next thing you know, the Scientologists look a little less wacky, right? And all of a sudden, wait, oh, yes, that's right. So I think that we're going to probably find these experiments, my guess is, I think there's one that does, that one of those rovers is going to have the ability to do some analysis. Isn't it, Lucianne, of the core that they're going to take? I think they're going, if I'm not mistaken, 6 feet down into the Martian surface, and they're going to see if they can pull up things that, obviously, we know there was water on Mars, and we know that, we believe there were amino acids, right? Isn't that correct? Do I have that right?
Well, maybe not amino acids, but there definitely is currently water on the subsurface of Mars. So there is this deep, deep lake that was found in Mars. So we don't have any idea like how much water there is, but we know that there are at least some environments where there is liquid water.
So if there were liquid water, that would be a likely place to find something, right, based on human experience?
Yeah, when we design life detection, you know, missions, whether it's looking for exoplanets or going to other worlds in the solar system, NASA's motto is follow the water. And that's not because life can't live in places that are super dry. It's just that water helps you, you know, if you think of life in sort of like the dry, the most basic sense of being like chemistry that is self-reproducing, you know, then I think you look for water because water helps those processes take place. And so, you know, places where life thrives here on planet Earth, those tend to be places that have water. So yeah, we look for those kinds of things. But, you know, I'm very hopeful that we will find, you know, that life is plentiful off of Earth. The difference, I think, is that scientists are never satisfied with being like, well, it's probably out there. You know, we got to find it.
Right, I know.
We want to know.
Oh, I think we
all
do.
You guys are pretty exact as a general rule.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Makes us great at parties.
But do you think in your lifetime that we will have definitive proof?
You know, I very much hope that in our lifetime, especially in my lifetime, because just selfishly, like, I would be very sad to leave this mortal coil without without knowing the answer to that, because it motivates a lot of my research. You know, but I think that our methods for detecting and finding life and, you know, doing all of these kinds of experiments is so much more sophisticated now. And even, like, you know, to take the example of Mars, the things we know about Mars now actually would help us interpret, like, that data from the Viking mission that we had, you know, these many decades ago. Like, we would be able to probably make better sense of it now than if than when they could back in, you know, the mid to late 70s. So, you know, even the things that we learn about these other worlds that don't specifically have to do with life help us understand the context of the things we discover when we go to actually try and detect whether life is there or not.
Got it. Lucianne Walkowitz from the Adler. Thank you so much. Appreciate it, as always.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Let's check in with Lauren Lapka and find out what's happening on the roadways. Coming up, your chance to rip us off for tickets to go see Northwestern Wildcats. Kev?
Go Cats. Thank you.
Take a while. Taking on the Ohio State University Buckeyes on Friday night at Ryan Field under the lights. Gonna be a huge thing. Stay tuned. After 5 o'clock, we got your tickets for that. And then on the other side of the news, we are going to be talking to Dr. Jim Adams. Dr. Jim is going to be here. The flu shot. Why you need to get the flu shot this season. We're not kidding about this one. This time we really mean it. And there's a reason that we really mean it. So we will find out from him exactly what that's all about. That comes your way after news with the Northwestern from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom with Kim Gordon in 2 minutes. All right, ladies and gentlemen, this is a moment that I always really look forward to every couple of weeks.
I know
Jim
it.
Adams is here from Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. And the good doctor has thoughts on so many things. But I want to start with this, the flu shot. Because people are starting to get their flu shots these last few weeks. Maybe your work is offering it. I know that they're in pretty good supply at pharmacies throughout the area. You can always call your primary care physician and try to set an appointment. They generally will do that.
Some pharmacies give you a discount if you get the flu shot on your purchase. So
right.
You got that working for you.
And it is one of those things, right, that the medical community always says, hey, this, yep. You could do one thing for yourself in a year, it's get this shot.
It is. The flu kills people every year, and you think it's not going to happen to you, but we do see it. It's very sad. The flu can be serious. Get the shot. They're out there. If you don't have insurance, public health clinics will give it for free. There's ways to get it.
Right.
So recommended for everybody over the age of what? Oh, babies, obviously.
Yeah, but right, children can get it, but talk to the pediatrician and they will get on the immunization schedule.
Okay.
Right, because that's it, and people stop and they think, well, the flu. There's such a misunderstanding of the flu.
There is.
When we say the flu in common parlance in America, we mean 50 different things. Right, people go, oh, I got the flu because they feel run down, they got a bad cold, or they get some sort of a digestive issue, and they go, I've got the flu. That's not what the flu is.
I had a little touch of the flu.
Right. There's no such thing. Once you have had the flu, influenza, you know what it is. Well, you will never forget it.
And my daughter did have a confirmed case of the flu last year, and it was just horrific. I mean, it really was. It was during the polar vortex, and she was just so out of it. The fever that we couldn't control. I mean, going back and forth in the freezing cold to try to get treated. It was truly just the worst thing to see her so lifeless and out of it. And she had the flu shot. It just happened to be one of those things where she still got it.
Yeah, fortunately, she did have the flu shot. Sometimes
so
that can moderate the effects a little bit, but the flu puts you in bed, knocks you out. It is unmistakable. It is really severe. And then some people can be life-threatening. And it can be young, healthy children and adults that it kills. It's very bad.
Right. And you don't even understand what the underlying, you may never have been tested for what the underlying thing is that could compromise you. Or you could just get a particularly bad strain of it in the way that you're being treated in it, because it can give you pneumonia. And that's basically the method by which you die, right? Either febrile or pneumonia.
That's right. And you pick it up, you touch a doorknob, you touch a handrail, touch your nose or mouth and don't even aware you're doing it, and you infect yourself. And so these unconscious moves, it's why a lot of hand washing, and decontaminate the environment, always good things. Yeah.
This year might be a particularly bad flu season is what we're hearing. That seems to be all the headlines right now. Kind of scary.
Where it is scary. Other countries are having bad flu seasons. And as it moves around the world toward Chicago, it looks like it's going to be a rough one. So we're particularly worried.
Mm-hmm. So when you talk about a rough one from you spent many years at Northwestern in the ER. You get a lot of people who are coming in that don't necessarily call their primary care physician. They just show up at the ER. You've seen this year after year after year. Is there something about that we're seeing that's coming out of Asia as the flu circles the earth, essentially, during this cycle, through its life cycle? Have you seen in Asia more hospitalizations with the flu this year than they normally would have? Those kinds of things that you got, the vectors that you guys look at.
That's exactly right. So the worst is deaths or hospitalizations, and we find that that's happening. And so each population will have different baseline health and be more susceptible to it, different baseline immunities. But when it's a bad strain that's causing lots of hospitalization, putting people out, or even causing deaths, that's the ones we're really worried about.
We have a texter says, I heard the over 65 flu shot is harder to get, that some pharmacies have run out of it this year. Do you see that often, that they run out of the flu shot?
So it is in shorter supply, but it does exist.
This is the over 60. Let's talk about what that is, though. That's a different flu shot.
It is. Talk to your doctor about it, because it provides different protection. The over 65s need a stronger immune response, mm-hmm. and sometimes they don't respond as strong to the regular flu shot. So we want a different. Talk to the doctor. The doctor can get this.
Now, in the medical profession, if you are under 65, do they also get the over 65 booster, as they call it?
No, we get the regular flu shot that everybody gets.
Okay. Just checking. Nothing special. You don't have like a little, there's like a secret room. They go, hey, like, I always kind of imagine it like a nightclub. You know, you go back, hey, let me just show you back here. This is where the real party is. But this is, it's a normal, everybody's getting this normal flu shot. And again, it does not make you sick. This is a misnomer. People who might already be sick with something, because this knocks your immunity down just a little bit as it starts, right?
So first, if there was something secret, you'd be the first to know.
I know that, Jim. Thank you. Appreciate it.
I would tell you. So there's nothing secret. And then, yes, the flu shot creates an immune response because your body's reacting, but it cannot cause the flu. And so, sure, you can get a little bit achy, but that's okay. That's because your body is building its immunity. It's perfectly fine. Take some Motrin, take some fluids, you'll be fine.
Yeah, that's what I do that anyway. Well, I try
just
to
be
do
careful.
That anyway.
Yeah.
I do that every morning regardless. All right, so the other question that people always give us is, a lot of people are, you know, as you know, you're a doctor, you get this, are phobic about needles. They don't want to be around them. So there's the nasal vaccine that people can take. What are your opinions on that?
Love the idea of the nasal vaccine. The last one that was on the market before didn't quite work enough. Children were getting it, needle phobic people. Unfortunately, it's off the market. They're reformulating it, making sure it's effective. Probably not going to be widespread availability this year. Don't count on it. Just get the regular shot. But next year, we're really hopeful that it will be around, and that would be a great option, especially for needle phobic and children.
Because it was a live neutered virus, right, is what it was. And are they going to still go with that?
I don't know what the formulation is this time around. I know that they're testing effectiveness. It's coming in limited availability, but
because it was significantly less effective than the shot.
It was not effective enough nearly, so it was just not good enough.
Especially 2 years ago during a really bad flu outbreak.
Bad flu season.
We've been running into these bad flus, and mm-hmm. one of the things about the way that these vaccines are formulated is that the people who do this, whether it's, you know, the different versions of the CDC around the world, they all kind of come together, right, on an idea of what the actual viruses are. They capture the viruses, essentially, and then they create a replication of that virus that is not alive, so that your body gets used to whatever that DNA strand of the virus is.
That's right. So they look at what's going on in the other countries as it moves around, predicts what's going to come to the United States, kills that virus, creates the vaccine accordingly, and then administers it to us.
So if that exact virus is in the environment, you're going to have immunity to it.
Exactly.
But it mutates.
Yeah, so that's the downside. The viruses are constantly changing, so we're not going to get 100% coverage this year. It's going to be limited effectiveness again, but it's still worth getting.
Okay.
What percentage of Chicago or the area, whatever data you have, really gets the flu shot, would you say?
So it's going to be less than 50%. In the best communities, probably 45% of people around the around Chicago where it's really available. And we want higher than that. We want much higher than that to make a big impact. So unfortunately, you know, we're preaching, but we need more.
Yeah.
All right. Stay right here. All right. I think we've done, we have convinced people that this is the right thing to do. Go do it. It's easy to do. It's safe. just a little pinch, as they like to say, while they're doing it. It is. I mean, it's so simple. It's like, you know, and I know people freak out, man. I get it. I understand that.
I
idea
love
of it is, yeah, I mean, who does, right? Mm-hmm. But there is, it's just so worth the anxiety, which is far worse than the actual, because it takes about 3 seconds, not even. Count to three and you're done, right? And you only feel that pinch for the second that it goes in, and that's it. It's done. And then you are going to give yourself a chance not to be in bed for a week or 2 weeks or, you know, potentially hospitalized as a result of this really, 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 really tough and insidious
disease. And make you the ones you love sick, especially if they have compromised immune systems.
Right.
Yeah,
oh,
there
see,
you go.
There you
all
go.
Right.
That's, see, the doctors just worked the guilt card.
Totally.
And I
works.
Like that right
guilt
there.
Guilt works.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Yeah. Are we half brothers? Do you share a mother with me? All right. Stand by. We'll come right back. I want to ask about this. Why owning a dog might save your life. This is a really interesting, interesting study. And the other thing that we wanted to talk about too is the, this was in the news last week and I did not understand it, about telling men, if they're thinking about having babies, don't drink while you're trying to get your mate pregnant. I couldn't get my mate pregnant if I weren't drinking. That just cannot be done. So could you just explain that on the other side, Dr. Jim?
Will do.
All right, Dr. Jim Adams from Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care, is with us. 312-91-7200 if you've got a question or you want to text in or you want to call in, that works. But first, let's check in with Lauren Lapka in the WGN Traffic Center. All right, Dr. Jim Adams is joining us.
Yes.
He's from Northwestern Medicine. And he's our medical director. Thank God he's here.
Thank God.
I just ask him during the breaks. I just sit around, pepper him with questions. I ask him to look at the moles.
That's pretty accurate.
I do the mm-hmm.
Just take a look at this. I'm sure you love that at dinner parties. People say, "Can you take a look at something?"
It happens all the time, doesn't it?
Never happens.
Anna, thank you for chaperoning.
Exactly.
No, seriously. All right. So we said go get a flu shot. That's the most important thing that we're talking about today. But there is this other. Now, you got to explain this to me, doctor, because this story last week was telling men, if you are planning on having a family, right, or you want to get your mate pregnant, in order to do that, you should stop drinking for a couple of months before you start the process. What in the hell is going on there, doctor?
Yeah, and there's other studies that back this up. And it's not just drinking. It's smoking and stress and other kind of lifestyle health. If the healthier you are, the better, the fertility. But more importantly, it's a matter of gene expression. So everybody passes along the genes. But how those genes are expressed is affected by the alcohol, the smoking, and the stress.
What does that mean, expressed? I thought genes are genes.
So genes are genes. Genes are like the piano keyboard, but the epigenetics, the expression, is the music that is played. So you have...
So how they match to the other, like how the boy and the girl match up and when the egg comes together there?
So the sperm and the egg come together, the baby is formed, but that baby will have certain genes, and certain genes will be, some will be up and some will be down regulated. And so it's just like how...
Based on the match, though.
Based on the match, but based on the genetics and based on the health of the mother and the father that come together. And so you can trace, if the grandfather had severe poverty, stress, deprived diet, smoking, you can find that in the grandchild.
Oh, my gosh.
If the grandfather had
grandfather. If the grandfather had a very deprived, difficult environment, you can see that. Even in express genes in grandchildren.
I've also seen this in fertility issues with friends of mine. When they are having difficulty having children, they often do lots of tests on the mom and sometimes forget about the dad, and that could be a contributing factor to the ability to have a child.
The both parents, the dad is incredibly important, And the even then the
not according to my lawyer, but go ahead.
And so the health of both people. So if you're thinking of children, live a healthy lifestyle. It really does matter, and not only it can matter generations ahead.
Oh, boy, well, I had no idea about that.
I mean, you do see it's interesting because you obviously there are real genetics in physical capability, right?
That's
the
right.
Like athletes, you know, the right. Children of athletes tend to be more athletic. You get a you can, and it's and now that you think about it, that gene expression piece, is that relatively new science, the whole idea of gene expression?
It's very new science. It's very new, and we're discovering more about it every day.
So there are things, so it's basically the amplitude within the gene itself about how pronounced it is. Did it get in some way decayed by other environmental or behavioral factors?
That's great. That's right. So certain genes will move up or down and produce more or produce less based on the health of the parents.
Got it. And so it's like the piano key going bad.
It's like the piano key going bad, or some keys will be sharp, crisp, and play loud, and some will be muted.
Okay. Well,
stuff to think about, Ro.
Now, you know what? Well, mm-hmm. I think I'm out of the business,
right,
but I don't know. All right. Now, let's also, this is my favorite story in health of the entire year, that owning a dog can actually help people have a lower risk of heart attack.
That just makes sense to me.
Is it?
You believe
the walking
this one? Is
piece?
This one real? Tell me it's real.
I do believe it.
Mm-hmm.
I do believe it. And we see this in people who have generosity, who have selflessness, who have thoughts, who aren't so focused on themselves, but really focused on giving to others. They're physically and mentally better off.
And they say even overall risk of having any disease, you can drop that by as much as 30% by dog ownership.
Yeah.
It's just in general health.
That's right. And so whether it's a dog, whether it's a person, thinking about something other than yourself, having something that's depending on you is very healthy.
Oh.
So there you go. Why don't you get a fish? Start there.
You
have a grand dog.
Quite honestly, I think that I'm dependent on the dog. I think that I have the sense that the dog is doing most of the work in the house anyway, I think, right? Because especially when I'm around the grand dog, which I'm around a lot now, and they, you know, he looks at me and he's got that look on his face, and I know that he knows what I know, and when he's doing that, he's doing something therapeutic. Right.
There is a therapeutic value to a dog. I have a dog, and I just they can sense your moods. They know when to curl up next to you to sort of make you feel better. There is something real to that. It doesn't surprise me that the research backs that up.
And they still like you no matter what.
They do. They don't judge you. See, bro?
Yes.
There's no judginess.
Right. Lock your dog in a trunk and drive 500 miles. And when you open it up, that dog's happy
don't
to see
do
you.
That.
Nobody else is, but the dog is happy to see you. All right. And I don't know if we have 60 seconds left to do this, but I'm interested in this. Hot tubs. Kids in hot tubs and tips for staying safe. Hot tubs are a bad idea generally, aren't they?
I think if it relaxes you, lowers your blood pressure, as long as it's in moderation, it's good.
Yeah, because a hot tub can lead to other.
Well, because it's a petri dish, or because it's too hot, you overheat.
People can get overheated if people drink or people don't clean them. So yeah, there's dangers, but there's dangers to anything. Keep it clean. Do it in moderation.
Okay.
Keep you just avoid all hot tubs.
Oh, my
you're,
God.
You're like, don't go near it.
Like
you don't even like the swimming pool.
Okay, so I checked into a hotel over the weekend, and it was a last minute hotel that I could get into, and so it was just one of those like off the road kind of motel, like hotel motel kind of thing.
Yeah,
and they had a pool, and I thought, okay, well, they got a pool, and then they had a hot tub in the pool, and all I could think about was I would have to be kidnapped, drugged at gunpoint to get into the hot tub in this particular hotel. Because, you know, when you walk into a hotel, you got that little smell.
Just the thought of it can just sort of make you crazy.
Right.
For you in particular.
Oh. The hot tub. Because I just imagine what goes on in the hot tub and then the people in the hot tub, and they go, you know, is my sore leaking in here? That's all I can think about. All right, Dr. Jim Adams, thank you so much for putting up with me and putting up with this. Northwestern Medicine, relentless.
Thanks, Dr. Jim.
In their pursuit of better health care. The Northwestern Medicine Newsroom is where Kim is, and that's coming your way in 2 minutes.
It's the top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Four, three, two, one. Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokon Show with Anna Tavlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
All right, I will.
All right, all right.
He's so mad at me.
Move it along.
Number five.
All right. Now, I don't know if this was good or bad. I don't know if this helps. But Hunter Biden decided he was going to break his silence. He finally spoke out, sat down with Amy Robach from Morning Television.
Good Morning America.
And was asked about whether he thought this was ever going to be a big deal, what he was doing.
Do you regret being on the board to begin with?
No, I don't regret being on the board. What I regret is not taking into account that there would be a Rudy Giuliani and a president of the United States that would be listening to this ridiculous conspiracy idea, which has, again, been completely debunked by everyone.
Okay. So, yes, this idea that there was a server, that the Ukrainians have Hillary's server, and that somehow his dealings with that energy company, Hunter's dealings with the energy company, had something to do with the contents of that server being in Ukraine, and that they were holding it there, and that they need the Ukraine, the brand new, brand spanking new, crystal clean, clear government to go in and find this. That's been this conspiracy theory, which doesn't seem to be holding any kind of water. However, she also asked him about that whole $1.5 billion from China that went to a hedge fund here, and?
Look, this is literally, has no basis in fact in any way.
Have you received any money from a business dealing?
No.
At all? Not 1 cent?
Not 1 cent.
Definitely not $1.5 billion.
It's crazy. They feel like they have the license to go out and say whatever they want. It feels to me like living in some kind of Alice in Wonderland, where you're up on the real world, and then you fall down the rabbit hole, and, you know, the president's a Cheshire cat asking you questions about crazy things that don't bear any resemblance to the reality of anything that has to do with me.
But he wouldn't answer how much money he actually got for the firm, and if it's gotten, you know, by all the rules being, you know, played the right way and things done, why not just talk about it?
So the idea
seems
here
like
was,
we're sort of hiding part of the story, and then we're negating this larger conspiracy part of the story.
So the 1.5, or let's just call it $1.5 billion, or $1 billion, whatever it was money that didn't go to Hunter Biden. It went to a U.S. investment firm from China. At a moment where China wasn't really doing a lot, wasn't investing a lot in those kinds of firms, and in America, and that's
and
been
it was linked
question.
To the Chinese government. Also, it was not necessarily just a private firm,
but the U.S. firm though was a.
It's the one he's linked to.
Yes, is the one that he's linked to, and I seem to recall that he received a $500,000, $468,000, or something like that dollar basic commission on that. Coming in, which does actually line up with the commission rates that are standard in that industry. So it's not as nefarious as it may sound, although he is dealing with the Chinese. Here's the problem. Can I just tell you what the problem is here?
He's Joe Biden's
son. That's the problem. And it is to all of a sudden guys who are not this is just bad optics. It's just bad optics. And this guy was trading off of his dad's name, all of that. That's how he was able to do this. It happens every day. Believe me, the Trump kids have done it too. And this happens. There are a bunch of other names, children that you've never, you know who the politicians are, you know where the dads are, you don't know who the kids are, and they do all of these things too. It's a way that politicians if they're clean, they don't get rich. But the people around them get rich. And then eventually when they leave public office, those favors are traded back. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the way
that's
always happened.
Absolutely right.
Now,
and we've seen on every level of government.
What Hunter Biden is referring to there, that whole Cheshire Cat thing, it is interesting because you're seeing this all the time now out of Washington, that people are just saying outrageous things. It's like the Soviet era. That's how the Soviets used to use all of these kind of disinformation campaigns and stuff on their own people. to try to convince them that everything was going just fine, even though the Soviet people were like, this is not going fine. I have one potato and I'm living in a closet. Right?
They go,
no,
fine.
This is great. And the imperialist West is the one that's holding you down and all that. So I would like to see, and we had John Kasich on the show yesterday. He's got this book out that is really an interesting read. I would like to see that truth be enforced with greater greater support, that we support those who tell the truth about things, and we try to shame those who publicly, openly lie. And just take that however you want to take it. I don't think anybody could disagree with that notion. I think that is as that, and I think we need to hold these politicians to the truth. And you're like, oh, well, what about, you know, what Barack Obama said, you could keep your doctor. Okay. Right? That turned out to be true. Let's hold him to the truth. But some of this stuff that's coming out that is, from another planet, that needs to be addressed, too. All right. Can't just choose one or the other. Otherwise, we're going to end up like the Soviets. Right? We're going to end up like the Soviet citizens. We do not want to do that. That was not good. They had a potato. They had a closet. They had maybe rusty water that they could cook their potato in.
We should not aspire to that.
No.
We can all agree.
Number four.
LeBron James is in the middle of this China thing now.
And it's not going away.
The China NBA problem. He talked about the Daryl Morey tweet that sparked the whole international incident, saying that the Rockets GM simply wasn't educated about China before he posted his pro-Hong Kong missive.
I don't want to get into a word or sentence feud with Daryl Morey, but I believe he wasn't educated on the situation at hand, and he spoke. So many people could have been harmed, not only financially, but physically, emotionally, spiritually. So just be careful what we tweet and we say and what we do, even though, yes, we do have freedom of speech, but there can be a lot of negative that comes with that, too.
Okay. I'm trying to figure out what shoe LeBron has that was just about to drop in China that he's mad about.
Well, then they have the exhibition games, and he traveled with his team, and he was in China they were on the plane just about to land when that tweet went out that set this firestorm. And so they walked in there, and all of the publicity things were canceled. All of the fan meet and greets and everything else they were supposed to do were canceled. They were ripping their pictures and ginormous faces off of billboards and buildings and cutting ties with all the Chinese partners. I mean, I'm sure they felt it when they got over there. I just think right now they're burning jerseys, LeBron jerseys, in Hong Kong, those protesters, saying that he should stand up for free speech. What is he saying? Negative consequences. We're on the right side of history.
So LeBron had to clean up on aisle LeBron.
I mean, it's a tough situation that we're all in right now as an association. Us as athletes, owners, GMs, whatever, so forth. And I think, you know, when an issue comes up, if you feel passionate about it or you feel like it's something you want to talk about, then so be it. I also don't think that every issue should be everybody's problem as well. You know, so, you know, when things come up, there's multiple things that we haven't talked about that happen in our own country that we don't bring up. You know, it's things that happen in my own community that, you know, trying to help my kids graduate high school and go off to college is, you know, what's been my main concern over the last couple of years, you know, in my school.
It's hard. They're all trying to walk the line.
Yeah. So he's basically, let's just keep it. Let's just keep it here. I'm sorry. I waited off into this. Holding's bad. Now Hong Kong's mad at me. Everybody's mad at me. Everybody has to be mad about something. And he just wants to get his kids into college. Now, I would like to point out to LeBron that he should not try to put them on the crew team if that's what he's going to do.
No. I think that, that would be a bad thing for sure.
Yeah. So that was his cleanup on aisle 23.
Well, he had to put out an apology tweet, too. He's like, hey, back off, Internet. Because they went nuts on him. Woo!
Well, it is, you know, at the end of the day, it is only the internet. I mean, it is, right?
Well, they were trolling him with his own tweets when he stood up for social justice and standing, being silent is not an option. And where are you now? Why are we supposed to all shut up? I mean, look, that's what the internet is all about. Everybody with polarized views going after each other.
I had not heard that.
He was
really
still trying to stay. I mean, I just think, he's trying to stay above the fray, right? He's in the league and... the game that he loves, doing what he loves, and it's a tough thing. It's a tough line to walk.
I just get recipes on the internet and then get right off. That's what I do.
It's all about
well,
the
you don't
videos.
Troll, do you? I mean, look, when you get trolled, what do?
I ignore it.
That's the best thing you can do.
Great yeah. response.
I ignore it.
Well done.
Because I'm like, who needs that? I mean, I wonder, like, who's the idiot who's doing that? Na-na-na-na, boo-boo. All right, let's find out
from you're glue.
Lauren Lapko, but she's got the traffic. What's happening?
For the news at 10, watch WGN. Micah Mater, Joe Donlin, Dan Roan, and Chicago's most trusted meteorologist, Tom Skilling. For TV news at 10, watch Chicago's very own WGN.
Number 3.
The Top 5-5 continues. Rock and Roll Hall of Fame announced their nominees for the 2020 class. And as usual, it's a group of very, very mixed group of genres here to stir the debate. You got Thin Lizzy. The Dave Matthews Band. And here's one I can't believe wasn't already there. The
right.
Doobie Brothers. Another one, Pat Benatar.
What? We are.
And for your headbangers out there, there's Motorhead. How about that? I would have thought they were all in there.
Number 2.
Today marks the 10th anniversary of the Balloon Boy, the original fake news hoax.
It started it all.
October 15th, 2009. 3, 2, 1.
Woo!
Are you here? Heather! You didn't put the Heather out!
Oh, wait, was it were the parents the ones behind
yes.
the boy come up? Okay, the parents.
Yes.
And they made their son do this?
Yes.
So I'm trying to remind
right.
what happened.
They
there.
Let the balloon go and they're like, oh no, the boy's gone away with the balloon. But the boy had not been in the balloon.
Oh boy.
Right? They yes. snuck that whole kind of thing in. Every news network had this story.
We're also told that this can go 10,000 feet into the air. This is a potentially very dangerous situation for this little child.
I actually was quoting an official with Larimer County, and she said it's just time for all of us to pray, because if there's a little boy in that balloon, only God can save him.
Oh, gee. Oh, my gosh.
And finally.
Number 1.
All right, for most people, funerals are not a joking matter. Except for this guy.
Most people.
Right. This guy. You know, here's a guy who planned a hoax on his own family for his funeral by placing a recorded message in his casket as they were lowering it into the ground. Still unclear exactly for me how he did this. I know it's been explained in the story. But he did this so it made it a sound to those who were at the funeral as though he was stuck alive in the casket.
Hello?
Oh, my God.
Let me out. Where the f*** are we? Let me out. Back
oh, no.
Here. Is that that priest I can hear? Hello?
That's amazing.
That
there
is.
There you go. All right, close this thing up.
The Top 5 at 5.
Well, this man is no relation, but I like to claim him as a relation all the time.
Boy, wouldn't you?
As we continue here on the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis. Mike mm-hmm. Rowe is here, and he's one of my favorites, one of my favorite performers, radio personalities, television personalities, podcast personality, and now author, Mike. Now an author. What were the chances of that? When you were in school as a kid, did you think one day you would have a book?
When I was in school as a kid, I was told that if you go back far enough, we're all related. So why don't we just consider ourselves brothers from other mothers?
All right, know? We can do it that way. That's all right.
Sure.
So, yeah.
But no, to answer your question, maybe a pop-up, but no, I never really thought about writing an actual book.
So the way I heard it, True Tales and the Curious Mind with a Short Attention Span by Mike Rowe, that basically does describe the whole
what
thing.
What a great title.
Because your podcast, a lot of this is based on things that you've done in your podcast, because you do short stories, and there are a lot, some of them, it's partial memoir, some of it are other kinds of stories that you pick up. Very Paul Harvey-esque, right?
Well, he was the guy, you know. There were four or five people 30, 40 years ago doing most of the storytelling, and Paul Harvey had a great way. Well, you know, I mean, geez, he's Chicago. He's a Chicago guy. So finding a way to make history interesting and biography interesting requires a mystery. And so these are short stories where the reader gets to figure out who I'm talking about, hopefully before I get to the end. But look, that's the podcast, which, not to brag, but man, they just called me. Well, this happened because they called 6 months ago, my producer, and said, dude, you have 100 million downloads. Do yourself a favor and, like, write a book. So we put a bunch of my favorite stories together, and we were going to put some hardback covers on it when my mother said, Michael, this is very lazy. You really should do something in between your stories about other famous people you've never met to let the reader know something about yourself. So the next thing I knew, I'm writing an accidental memoir that's basically interrupted by true-ish stories of these famous people who I never met but who have always been interested in. And that's the book. It's a thing, and it was a heck of a thing. Everybody should write a book, guys. You'll learn things about yourself you wish you didn't know.
Well, I would think that there would be something that sort of you just want to pull your hair out because you're thinking about, you write about yourself. What do you start? What do you bring in? What, you know, the whole process would be sort of intimidating. I realize that some of yours came from your podcast, though. You drew upon that, but then you had to sort of round it out. Did it take a long time to do?
It took a while. It wasn't that it took a long time. It's that it really forced me to think about things I haven't thought about in a very long time. My resume, as we've discussed in the past, is kind of a hot mess of really weird and random things. So what I tried to do was tell stories of jobs that I've had over the years that somehow rhyme or relate to the stories I tell of some of the famous people that are in the book. So it goes back and forth between biography and autobiography, mystery and memoir. But it's a useful thing to do. Everybody should really look back 20, 30 years at the job where you learned something, truly learned something that wound up being valuable, but you didn't really think would be at the time. That fundamentally is what the book is.
What was yours?
Well, around 3 in the morning on the QVC cable shopping channel between the years of 1989 to 1992, I sat there doing my best impersonation of a host on live television, trying to make sense of the craziest list of products you can imagine. And, you know, I learned everything I needed to know about the TV business selling crap in the middle of the night on QVC. It was weird, tragic, funny, and most of my mistakes are somehow chronicled today on YouTube. And, you know, when you can't outrun your past, you might as well write about it. So,
embrace it.
That's true. I mean, now we can't. I mean, social media doesn't allow you, and YouTube and other things don't allow you to outrun your past if you have had a public life. And even if you've had a private life, you know, people get jammed up in this. So, all right, what was the stupidest thing that you had to sell as you were in your prep, because you guys would go to a prep meeting, you know, before the show, here are the things that you're going to have to sell. Was there one where you're in the prep and you're like, oh my God, what am I going to do with this?
Well, sure. Except for the fact that I never went to a prep meeting.
oh boy.
Yeah. I mean, I never should have been hired. I was singing in the opera when I heard that they were in Baltimore looking for hosts. And I went just to settle a bet. I bet a bartender buddy that I could get a call back. So I talked about a pencil for 8 minutes, got hired, and then they literally put me on the air in the middle of the night with no training and said, look, we just want to watch and see how you do with products you've never seen before. And the very first product I got was something called the Health Team Infrared Pain Reliever that would purportedly blast rays of infrared light into your arthritic knuckles, thereby bringing a new sense of relief. So I thought it was a joke. I mean, I honestly thought it looked like something that the claw on the Carnival Midway pulls out of the machine, you know? And I'm,
or and doesn't.
So I picked this thing up. True story, I looked right in the lens and I said, hi, everybody, I'm Mike. I'm the new guy. I don't know what this thing is. If you're home, look, it's 3 in the morning. It's just us. All we have are each other. Do me a favor. call the number on the screen and explain to me what the hell this thing does. Well, we were overwhelmed with calls. Not people giving testimonials, but people who just were willing to do my job for me. And so I sat there literally for 3 hours between 3 and 6 a.m. taking phone calls from people and letting them sell whatever the product was. And that was the beginning of my misspent career. And ever since, I've tried to take that lesson, which is, look, if you don't know what you're doing, it's best to admit it. Let somebody else do it for you.
Yeah,
that's, well, being honest with yourself, right? Knowing who you are. And that's the hardest part, I think, of becoming an adult or becoming a functioning adult, I suppose, is it's a, and some people, you know, are functioning. They still don't fully understand who they are, but the closer you get to that micro, the better off you're going to be. And I think that's one of the things that makes you such an appealing television personality, you know, podcast host, author now, is that you make people calm because they figure you kind of know what you're doing. And if something broke, you'd probably fix it.
Well, I want to ask you about that because people do know you from Dirty Jobs, of course, and, you know, Deadliest Catch, you narrated as well. But are you handy? Because I've heard that you might not be.
No, I'm not. And
oh, God, don't say that. Don't say that.
I know. Well, listen, but look, it goes right to your point, right? Everybody who looks at Dirty Jobs assumes I can pour a foundation, build a house, you know, construct a bridge, whatever. I can't. My grandfather could. My pop could literally build a house without a blueprint. But the handy gene is recessive. and it literally went right over me. But Dirty Jobs was a tribute to my pop. My mother actually called me. I was working for CBS back in the 90s, and she said, Michael, you know, your grandfather's 90. It would be so awesome if he could turn on the TV before he dies and see you doing something that looked like work. And I'm like, geez, Mom, that's harsh. But, of course, she was right. So I started this idea of being an apprentice instead of a host. That's where Dirty Jobs came from. And once it got on the air, the thing that really saved my bacon was I didn't have to pretend to know anything I didn't. As an apprentice, you show up and you take orders and you try and keep up. And so that was the role that got me to where I wanted to go. But that job required the lesson that I learned in the middle of the night at QVC 20 years earlier with the Health Team Infrared Pain Reliever. When in doubt, let somebody else do it.
Yeah. I like the lawyers who are going to have to represent that product for years and years and years afterwards.
What an experience.
Your mom sounds like a really interesting figure in your life because she seems to be the one that's provoking you to try to do more and better and get off your ass. Do I have that right?
That's exactly correct. Somewhere between Betty White and Joan Rivers and America's grandmother is my mom, who herself became a best-selling author last year when I read a story she wrote me. My mom's been writing me stories for 30 years. I read one and posted it on my Facebook page, and it was downloaded and viewed 70 million times. So my mother, yeah, crazy. My mom wound up with a book deal, and then all my friends and my business partner was like, dude, your mother wrote a book and she's 80. Maybe you could get off your ass and write a book too.
How's that for motivation?
Honestly, look, never underestimate the enduring power of shame. That's exactly what it is. You know, if an 80-year-old grandmother can do it, what in the world is my excuse?
That's true. Although you do, you know, it's not like you're lacking for work,
no.
Micro. I gotta say, you know, you're one of those guys that people in our business go, "Wow, well, he got all the jobs." You are basically Michael Strahan in a hard hat. Is essentially what you are, go ahead.
Well, I'm just saying, I like to stay busy, and because I have a short attention span disorder, you know, I don't like to do the same thing over and over if I can help it, but I also try and stay in my lane, and my lane is I'm an avatar. I'm a cipher. I'm really not an expert in anything at all, but I somehow Forrest Gumped my way into this place of apprenticeship. And, you know, that works in podcast, and it works in TV. It works in radio, too. It works It works in life, really. And so that's kind of, if I figured out anything, it's not to get ahead of your skis and, you know, tell the truth as best you can. And if there's a punchline, don't be afraid to be it. Be the punchline.
That's true. Because it actually feels really good to make fun of yourself. I have found that to be the case. Because everybody else is making fun of me, I'm just getting ahead of them. That's the way I'm looking at it.
You take out the punchline before.
All right, so you're going to be in Chicago on Monday. You're actually going to be at the Wentz Concert Hall, the campus of North Central College in Naperville. And for $32, people can come in and they can get a copy of the book. And they can basically, it's a night of storytelling there as well, right?
Here's how crazy things are. I forgot about that. I'm in New York right now in the back of an SUV sitting outside of a bar called Elgin. I'm about to go inside, interview somebody for something, and then I'm going over to Tucker Carlson. I completely forgot. I'm sure somebody would have reminded me. But, yeah, Chicago, Monday night.
Yes.
Naperville. I'll be there.
Okay. Now, for the $32... you tell the story. Now, do you get the book with the $32? You got to buy the book extra. I just need to know the answer to that.
For $32, here's what I do.
Yeah.
I do the entire book in interpretive dance on the stage.
I know from your opera days. I know this is how that goes.
He's a performer. Mike, sounds like your mom's a tell it like it is kind of woman. What does she say about the book?
Well, she's brutal. In fact, the reason the book exists is because my first instinct was to simply take the more popular stories from the podcast and put them together into a collection. And she said, "Oh, Michael, what an amazingly lazy approach to literature." And I was like, okay. So it was her idea to say, look, I know you don't want to write a memoir, but tell people why you wrote about the people you wrote about, and it'll be much better. So right now, it's just all about I Told You So. She literally called a half hour earlier to tell me that very thing. So the best thing that's happened to me as a result of all of this is really the chance to work with my mom, you know, help her with her book. She helps me with mine. And kidding aside, look, to be 82 years old and become a first-time best-selling author, that's some pretty high cotton. I'm really proud of her, and I'll be lucky to follow in her footsteps.
That's awesome. That's
You're
beautiful.
A good son, Mike Rowe. You don't have to send her anything for Mother's Day. All right, here we go. The Way I Heard It, True Tales for the Curious Mind with a Short Attention Span by Mike Rowe. MikeRowe.com, of course, it's R-O-W-E. That's what bifurcates us. That's the difference in spelling.
There's a W in there.
Yes, I know. Thanks. All right, we will talk to you again soon. Thank you so much for doing this. Appreciate it.
And of course, you get a book with the $32. Of course, you do.
That is
all right. Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, there you go. It's Mike Rowe. Let's check in now. Lauren Lapko, what's happening on the roadways? There you have it. News from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom coming your way at the top of the hour. Kim Gordon is there, celebrating the cheating Green Bay Packers winning a game last night. I don't want to talk about it. It's nothing to discuss. I can't.
Well,
have it.
The refs might as well be wearing.
Don't you think there was a little Aaron Rodgers magic in there, too? Come on, that pass at the end?
I would like to say, speaking of passes at the end, I have 4 tickets to go see Northwestern take on Ohio State on Friday night under the lights at Ryan Field.
Ha-ha, you didn't say the.
The Ohio State University comes into Evanston, and they are going to be, they're favored. They're heavily favored in this game.
You think? This could be ugly. But I hope not.
But it is going to be fun, and there's going to be a lot of Ohio State fans there. That is true. You're going to see a lot of Scarlet and Gray. Mm-hmm. That's just what happened.
That is what happens. It's a larger school. You know, it totally dwarfs the size of Northwestern, and they've got a lot of alumni who want to be there.
I was on that campus on Saturday, and it is, It's basically the size of a city, the Ohio State campus. Yeah. It goes on and 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 on. And there's the stadium itself. The stadium's bigger than Soldier Field.
How about
and they
that?
Fill it up every time they play. So it's good there, and there's a lot of people who will be coming to this. But in Evanston, you never know. There could be a miracle, as Lauren Lapka will tell you, who, you know, she went to Purdue. And twice in this decade, which is just about to end, we're just about to close out the 20 teens. Twice in this decade, Purdue beat highly favored Ohio State. So there's that.
Pretty badly.
Yeah. So
it could happen.
All right, so caller number 15, 312-981-7200. Caller number 15, 312-981-7200 rips us off for the tickets. It's a four-pack of tickets to go see the Wildcats take on the Buckeyes.
Gee, undergraduate enrollment at Ohio State, what would you guess?
It's 48,000, I think.
Yeah, it's just about right.
Yeah.
You and like then with graduate. Undergrads.
Right, and then with graduate, it's 60-something thousand.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is a city.
It's a city unto itself.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very fun campus now because Columbus has really grown up as a really cool city. It wasn't always, but it certainly is now. So I would, it'll be fun. This will be a fun thing up in Evanston on Friday night. It's under the lights. What are the chances that you would be able to go see that? Because it's the first time I believe they have played on a Friday night under the lights at Ryan Field.
You know, it's a good thing to look into or ask Mr. Cat, Dave Ennett, because that's, don't remember.
Yep, that's very true. All right, all of that is happening. But first, in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, we have got Kim Gordon standing by. She's got the news. It's the Rokon Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. All right, here it is. Here's the moment. If you turn on the TV,
mm-hmm.
if you turn on any of the news channels.
Like the cable newsers?
The big debate tonight in Westerville, Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And the
Key
campus.
Swing State?
It's at Otterbein. Which I don't know. Somehow, so, you know, I can't quite figure it out. That was Otterbein was my college's rival,
mm-hmm.
one of the rivals. I mean, we were in the same conference. We ended up playing them, and I was like, "Who would go to Otterbein? What a goofy name that is for a school, Otterbein." And here they are. And I thought that Otterbein wasn't going to amount to anything. And here they are. All
it's
of
big.
The Democrats are in, they're on a line. They're all sitting there. They're promoting this. A.B. Stoddard joins us to think these thoughts. They are. This is the largest presidential debate ever. And they're promoting it like that's a good thing. It is not a good thing. Is it?
I know. I think it's hilarious that they keep promoting it. Like, make sure you don't watch because it's the largest Democratic debate ever.
I know.
Make sure you dread it even more than you thought you were going to.
Because
I really don't want to watch it.
There's 49 minutes to go, and they've already started the opening ceremonies. They got a guy out there singing the national anthem. They're going to have
the
a juggler.
Ceremonies.
Right. I mean, there's might as well. I think they're going to. There's going to be a. It's even though it's in like a gymnasium, they might do a flyby with jets. I mean,
it's a big night.
I don't know. What are they doing? I would just.
I just can't believe they don't want this to end. Can't they start killing off the candidacies?
That's a great question.
Well, okay.
I would think the pack would have been a lot thinner at this point than it is
yes.
now.
So we just had a doctor in the studio with us because AB, as you know, I'm a hypochondriac and I have to have a doctor with me at all times. So we were talking to the doctor, but this was actually a sponsored doctor. We were talking to him a little bit off the air about Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
And the fact, and I was like asking, like, you know, shouldn't he be like at home resting after he just had this thing done? And he said, it's a paradoxical thing. He couldn't comment on Bernie Sanders himself, but he said people who have that procedure in their mid 70s, they feel better than they felt in years because the blood flow is going. Right.
Yeah.
And so he's going to, you're going to see, it's going to be like Bernie Sanders, like on a crack pipe is what it's going to be like tonight. He's going to be, his arms are going to be flailing around and he's going to have numbers
yeah.
and there's going to be spittle. There's going to be a lot going on there tonight.
Spittle. Yeah. It's going to be Bernie on like Monster or something. I don't know if I'm definitely going to not watch now. I think enough of the spittle and the flailing arms.
All right. Let me just
giving up.
Tell you right now, because what they're doing is they're going from the furthest out, we have the least percentage, to the middle where the most percentage. So you're going to have Biden and Warren and Bernie next to each other. And then Buttigieg, who is fourth, interestingly enough, according to the most recent polls. And I have a thought. I would like to get your thought on this, because it Real Clear Politics, I mean, you guys look at polls, and that's an important part of sort of what, when you go to that website, what you see and what you get. Do you think that if Bernie were to get out, I don't think everyone would go to Elizabeth Warren. I think half at least would go to her. And that would, but I think that's the max she's going to get. Biden seems injured in this moment. Is there room? I know this sounds crazy, but I'm just about ready to be crazy. Is there room for Pete Buttigieg in this, do you think?
Ro, it's Trump's America. I want you to be crazy. I want you to feel free to be crazy. I love Pete Buttigieg. I think he's incredibly impressive. I think he's had more challenges, experiences, breadth of knowledge, experience, expertise, perspective than most people three times his age, okay, at least twice. I think he's just one of these people that is really, really smart and is really able to speak to people about the things that they care about in a calming, measured, non-intimidating way. And I think the following he has with voters is really intense. And I'm not surprised he raised all that money. And I'm not surprised that he's like a new sort of dark horse for Iowa, maybe, you know, for top three finish. He has a problem with the black voters. I don't think it's entirely because of his experience as mayor. They are more culturally conservative, and I have been told by many black Democrats that it's going to be tough to get them to nominate a homosexual man in 2019, though that seems like it would be, you know, no problem. It's not going to be among culturally conservative, church-going African-Americans who traditionally have decided the nomination. And you combine that with his, you know, problems with the police department. So that would have to dramatically change for him to be a big contender. I do think that if you look at polling, a lot of Bernie's second choice voters, the second choice is Biden for them. It's not always Elizabeth Warren. So I think you make a good point that if he were to leave, which I do not think he will, it doesn't mean that she consolidates, you know, she gets all his vote. I think it's better, obviously, for Biden if Sanders stays in, because he continues to sort of, you know, put a damper on Warren's scent a bit, but, things are still really fluid. I mean, the idea that Buttigieg is fourth and Harris has faded is significant. And I just, even though Biden has, Warren was rising at the same time the president attacked Biden, I think Biden should be happy about his durability in the polls. Warren, if you look at some polls, could be called the front runner, but Joe Biden, after what he's gone through all these many, many, many months, is still standing. And it's not, he's just not that kind of person that people are suddenly going to get to know and change their mind about.
Yeah,
so he
true.
Has a strong shot at the nomination.
A strong brand. Right. Okay, let me ask you about Hunter Biden, who was on television this morning.
Yeah.
He's come out now and he said, listen, we didn't do anything wrong. I didn't do anything wrong. We're living in an alternate universe. People can say whatever they want to say. And then it's printed as true. And that's not exactly how this went. I'm not part of a gigantic conspiracy, but I did the wrong thing by trading on my dad's name, essentially, is what he said. And I shouldn't have done that. And now his dad's announced a new ethics rule that he would have if he were to become president and blah, 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 blah. Shouldn't Hunter Biden now go on a very long hunting trip somewhere or camping trip? Somewhere that where we don't
and be a hunter.
Yes, exactly. Or not? Maybe not be a hunter. Maybe that doesn't play with the Democratic primary voter. But just go sit in a tent in Canada for the next 6 months until Dad either goes through this thing or doesn't go through this thing. Because my sense is that Biden is banged up a little bit here now. Not as banged up as the like Rudy Giuliani is about to be. So there, if for the people who are the anti-corruption, drain the swamp voters. And there's a lot of independents who are like that, right? They voted for Trump because they do want him to throw the tables over and do things like that. And now they're seeing that, well, maybe these guys were, he surrounded himself with a bunch of people who were doing sort of a similar thing. So, and Biden certainly seems like he would be one of those guys. That's why I think maybe an outsider makes some kind of sense, because that seems where the temperature is.
Oh, look, I think the Democratic Party is deeply divided, and I think that this is because people, you know, there's real concern in the party with like Wall Street donors basically saying we will support Trump or stay at home and not support Elizabeth Warren if she's a nominee. There's serious concern in legitimate, credible quarters of the party about her being unelectable. You have concerns about Biden, you know, A to Z. I think that this is a very fluid situation, so I'm not going to be surprised if this whole thing is like upended later. It's that fluid and it's that unsettled because the party is so divided.
Somebody else get in here, do you think? Can someone else get in?
I don't think anyone else can really get in. I don't see that happening, but I do think that things could definitely change. What I'm saying is that if you look at the movement for Elizabeth Warren and away from Biden, it still sort of hews to the people are, you know, getting more excited about her and hoping she's electable rather than, you know, all of a sudden Joe Biden, who's had like his whole career of, you know, clean ethics and character, is suddenly sullied by this. Hunter Biden didn't cross legal or ethical lines. Hunter Biden, you know, benefited from cronyism. Children of people holding great power always get jobs we can't have. They get book deals we can't have. And everybody knows that. The Trump children are profiting off the presidency with abandon. And it's a situation where the defense that Biden's on, the fact that he was so slow to respond has set him back. But look at the fact that none of the Democrats are likely to attack him on it tonight. Look at the fact that it also is the subject of Trump's impeachment. So yeah. It's not such a clean hit, right? If it's something to the voter who's out there busy and is skeptical of both parties, knows who Biden is, knows a lot about Biden because he's, you know, been our vice president, is going along and has paid a little attention to this Hunter. It happens to be the thing that has gotten Trump in the most hot water. So he's also, you know, he's muddy. It's not like a clean hit on Biden, I don't think.
All right.
You know, it's interesting because you mentioned Buttigieg earlier and how it seems as if he's, you know, he's in that fourth place, which, you know, he wants to pick up traction at this point. And in the past debates, he's come across like the adult in the room. And as you mentioned, he's always sort of calm and measured, has this respectful presence. But in the recent days, he's come out and been a little bit more of an attack mode. He's gone after Warren's pledge to keep big money out of politics and rely on small donors. He says we're not going to beat a billionaire with pocket change. And then he just released an ad today attacking some of the healthcare plans of his rivals who want the, you know, kind of the healthcare for all kind of plans, or Medicare for all kind of plans. It seems as if he's changing his posture here, that he may need to sort of push a little bit tonight in order to gain that traction.
I think it's very smart because he's actually trying to stake some claim in the center. And, you know, you saw Sherrod Brown, senator from Ohio, today. He was going to run for president and didn't, I think, because of Biden. And he said today that the party's in trouble with any nominee publicly declared for Medicare for All. I think that Buttigieg is going to join Biden in making the case. And I think Buttigieg is right to set up contrast, shake off Beto O'Rourke, who's...
Oh, God.
They were both in the cool, hip white man from a young white guy from a red state camp. And I think, you know, O'Rourke is looking like he's finished himself off. And I think it is really time, in my opinion, as you guys have heard me say so many times, for someone to stand up at that debate stage and say, these positions are electoral losers. You know, I don't know how far Buttigieg goes tonight. But at some point, people have to start telling the audience, like, in your dreams, can you legalize, you know, border crossings and give healthcare, free healthcare to illegals and set up a giant reparations program and let people in prison vote and all these things that are pulling at like 27%.
Right. And I think the other thing, if he really wants to break out totally, he will at some point just make an admission that he is the Lucky Charms guy. And that's what, because everybody goes, I know him from somewhere. Where do I know him from? And it turns out it's your cereal box. That's where you know him from. All right. I just want, I would like to see.
Dignified guy. I just. I'm sorry. We can't. We can't do this to him.
I know. I'm just saying that. That's who he reminds me of. All right. I would like to see right now from left to right. I'd like to see Gabbard, Steyer, Booker, and Harris all quit in the in their first speech and just walk off, and they take the podium with them. Take their podium with them, and then in the second half, I want to see Yang and O'Rourke and Klobuchar and Castro walk off. And that's it.
Bye-bye.
Just goodbye. That's it.
I know. Although I want to keep Andrew Yang around because he's this great sort of, he's like this little boat of hope where we think, see, some non-politician can come in without attacking, using sensible, rational appeals to people's, to the greater good with like new, fresh ideas. And it's like, you know, that's what we wish it all could be. Right?
Yes, but Andrew,
and $1,000 a month, too, for everybody. That would be great.
Andrew, I mean, $1,000. I mean, that is the most ridiculous thing ever. And that's just so not an American
principle. I'm not into the basic income, but I'm into the fact that he keeps presenting our greatest challenges as the you know, the subjects that we're avoiding in these debates, that they're avoiding in these debates.
Here's what worries me about him is that, you know, he's such a wonk that at some point he's going to decide that the human is useless because actuarially, these people aren't going to live anyway. Let them go. I mean, I worry about guys who spend too much time in front of a screen, and he seems like one of those dudes. All right. That's it. We'll watch what happens, AB.
Thanks, AB.
Have
Don't
fun.
Call me next week. I'm not going to be alive after this debate.
All right. Thanks. Goodbye. Me neither, care. Maybe. Bye.
Florida Mayor Wayne Messam has raised $5 this quarter for his presidential campaign. You think he should be one of those that goes by? He didn't make the debate stage, but he's still in the race.
I don't. Who?
Wayne Messam.
He's the guy that sings the national anthem, isn't he? All right. Let's check in now with Lauren, find out what's happening in the roadways.
He's not a Bears player, but he makes the cut. How Lawrence Funk won the spot at Hallis Hall for a shave and a haircut. Wednesday's cover story on the WGN TV News at 9 o'clock.
Go get him, Lori Funk.
Lori.
Larry.
Larry.
Or Lori. So Lori's his wife. I don't know. I don't know. I don't even understand that promo.
No.
Am I supposed to understand
it? We didn't have time to ask Ben about it earlier, but I'm sure it'll be good.
They have a team barber now.
Oh.
So you hear the story of that.
The team barber at over by Hallis Hall.
Correct.
Now, let me ask you a question. If you're on injured reserve, do you still get your hair cut?
I don't know. You can kind of bum it and just sit around. You don't have to look all that fresh because you're really not in the public eye.
Right.
But whatever you're feeling. If you want to.
If you're Kyle Long. Does Kyle Long have to show up? Because he's probably done with the Bears now. Does he even have to be there?
Yeah, I mean, he can't
get to rehab, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think if he just leaves, he's going to. I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, I guess he doesn't really have to be.
I mean, somebody get his agent on the phone. We'll figure this out.
Yeah, all right. It doesn't really matter. He's not playing the rest of the year.
Right. And unfortunately, that's Akeem Hicks also lost for the year here. That's coming up in the sports.
Not for the year. He could be back.
Oh, I thought.
Nope. If you're injured reserve, you don't have to designate a time, but you have to miss a minimum 8 games. So he could be back later in the year, week 15.
Oh.
Yeah. But they said there's no shot Long's back. So they were just obviously done with that whole thing.
Okay. All right. What the hell has happened with Halloween? Wait till you hear this story. And science behind why you hate candy corn coming your way. But first, the news. All right. I would like to say that we have a... seems always... In every group of people,
mm-hmm.
coworkers, friends, group, even family, there's one person who's Halloween nuts, right? There's always one person who's just a little too excited about, you know, getting dressed up.
Decorating,
you know, carving a pumpkin, doing that thing where you shave the pumpkin so that it's varying degrees of light that come through it. And it
Okay. Who are you talking about, Ro?
And we have one here now who might be a little bit of a Halloween nut.
What do you expect? I was born on October 22nd.
Okay.
It's close enough.
That's a good reason to love it. Did you have Halloween themed birthday parties?
Oh, all the time. It was the best.
That's fun. Oh, that's
costume
fun.
Parties. We'd go to haunted houses and stuff like that. Good times.
You had costume parties before it was a fetish, right?
Yes.
I mean, that's the thing now. Now it's like there's like a whole other like economy to that. That goes on on the other 364 days in the year, which is look out. All right, so let me ask you this. Do you have your pumpkins done yet?
I've done one.
Are they on social media or anything?
Yes. I saw you post something. Were those from years past? Because they were really cool pumpkins.
Thank you. Yes. So the
jack-o'-lanterns.
What I posted today is a collage of some of the pumpkins I've done in the past few years, because I posted a time lapse from a pumpkin I did on Saturday that took me 5 hours, which is actually less than normal. So people were asking about it. But I'll do one almost once a week in October usually, but I'm behind.
And she's very nervous about it. I'm behind. I've got to catch up on my pumpkins.
Do you ever do the ones where you like melt crayons onto them?
No, I haven't done that. I've only really done anything with carving, or, as Ro likes to point out, shaving. I haven't done any of like the painting or anything like that.
So you do like the kind of the creepy traditional ones with lights in them and things like that?
Yes, I try to. Sometimes they'll be creepy. Sometimes they'll just be cool. I did one that's a merry-go-round. So you could set it on something that would spin. Mm-hmm. So it looked like the merry-go-round with the horses going up and down.
Again, this is what this whole thing is all about. Yeah. It's turned into like, Halloween has turned into a psychosexual adventure, I think, for adults. It used to be just for the kids. The adults wouldn't get dressed up. They would just take the kids. The kids would get dressed up in some cheap costume with the
mask. Right, the plastic one with the mask that cut into your eyeballs.
Yes. That sort of, you got LASIK surgery as that's how they invented LASIK surgy.
That's
was
right.
A direct result.
Wasn't around before then, yeah. Isn't that weird?
Exactly. People go, oh my God, I cut my, oh my, I can see. How did that happen? So here is a moment where it's all changed. And now it's the adults are getting all dressed up and they're wearing the mask and they're having red wine. And the next thing you know, there's a pile of coats that's moving in the guest bedroom. That's what's going on now, my friends.
I'll never forget my first Halloween in college. Great memories.
Oh, I'm sure for a dude.
It's like, oh. This is how they approach it, huh?
Yeah, right. This is what it looks like on a college campus.
Yeah, it's
interesting.
Like unreal.
Yeah.
Clothing optional.
Mm-hmm. And then and I think there's also that liberating thing about, you know, putting on a costume and all of a sudden now you're not you anymore. You're somebody else.
You can act like somebody else. Yeah. You can do things you might not normally do. Let down some inhibitions.
And it turns out that sometimes the women who are like the most shy, they put on the costume, and there's like some freak thing going on in the costume, and you're like, how in the hell did that just happen? Who is that?
Yeah. I think for a woman, the harder part is when a guy dresses up in such a costume that you have no idea truly who it is, and they come up a little too close because they know you, like, hey, how's it going?
Oh, so
like,
creepy.
Wait a minute. Whoa, whoa. Who are you? Do you know what
I'm
talking about?
That's why I like
Lauren?
Having costumes with a weapon, like a lightsaber. Then you just,
I mean, like,
do
you have a real light? Something tells me that Lauren actually has a laser lightsaber.
I've got those ninja dagger stars, okay?
Yeah,
I dressed
exactly.
As a ninja this year, and these are real, damn it.
I just put a stun gun in my Jedi Knight sword.
She doesn't use props. She's got the real thing.
I did have a pair of swords once when I was somebody from Mortal Kombat.
I do not doubt that. I don't doubt that. Yeah, she really is. Well, the one thing that we do know about our Lauren Lapka is don't get too close, because she will take you out. She can spin kick. She can do all this. I mean, she's got that thing. She's capable of a lot of things. All right, so here are the by the numbers for Halloween.
Okay, we're ready.
Shoppers are going to spend an average of $87.
On candy?
On stuff. The whole
really? A costume alone can be $87.
Yeah, they can.
Yeah.
Really?
That is down just slightly from last year.
And if you're in one of those neighborhoods with a lot of trick-or-treaters, you can spend more than that on candy.
There will be $8.8 billion in total spending. That's down from last year at $9 billion. That's interesting.
Pray for the Halloween industry.
Yeah. You wonder, why is it going down? I don't know. The economy's a little softer. Maybe their sales.
Maybe people have so many costumes now because it's gotten so big, people are sharing more.
Oh.
Let me borrow that costume from 3 years ago.
I like the way you're thinking.
Yeah.
We should do a study.
We should.
A total of 172 million people plan to celebrate Halloween. 68% of America is going to celebrate.
Slower
in some
than
way,
I would
form.
Think.
Yep. And that also is down from last year.
Wow. The war on Halloween, huh? just when the war
did
on Christmas ended.
Did someone kill it?
The war on Christmas ended a couple years ago,
right.
And now there's a war on
okay.
Halloween.
I think that the Lucky Charms guy, Pete Buttigieg, should do that tonight at the debate and get up there and go, all right, I'm ending the war on Halloween.
Yay.
I want you to get your freak on. I want people to dress however they want to dress.
Well, there's that whole movement to move it to a Saturday, so it's not just the 31st.
It doesn't matter, because that's the beauty of Halloween. Like, that's why it's awesome. If it's on a Wednesday, you celebrate for a whole week, the weekend before and after.
Yes. It's always going to be on a Saturday anyway. Whatever the Saturday before Halloween is when it all hell breaks.
But for trick-or-treaters, the parents.
Oh, you're talking about trick-or-treaters. Yeah. I'm thinking of the...
not just the partiers.
Yeah.
All right. If they want to do that as a...
That's fine.
Although I do, and I don't like the fact that these schools, these damn schools.
Yeah, what are they doing?
And they're taking away the Halloween from the kids. Yeah. Because
you can run on this.
Yes, I mean,
run on Halloween.
They're taking away the Halloween from the kids. They can't let them show up in school in your costume, because that's one of your uses of the costume. Because if you're only going to wear it to trick or treat, it does seem, especially with little kids, because they get the costume, they want to put it on.
Yeah, they want to share it, show their friends, be at school with it, for sure. And then sometimes it rains on Halloween and you kind of run inside and you don't spend much time showing it off anyway.
Right.
Or it gets dark and you got to cover it, or cold, you got to cover with a coat.
Let them go to school. Let them wear the stuff. Don't worry about it. Okay, most people are going to buy their Halloween things online. 35% said that they are going to do that. That's the biggest number of how they're.
Which makes sense, because obviously we buy everything online. But costumes are tricky.
28%. So 35% are going to buy online. 28% are going to go to a store. And 20% are going to do the costume sharing. App. There must be sort of the Uber of costumes.
Please tell me that's not true. Is there one?
Yeah. Well, there's a way to friends and family. They're going to just. You know.
2 stars. This one smells weird. What'd you do last Halloween?
Right, exactly. There's some of them. I don't know.
Pinterest has cited by 18%, up from 13% in 2015 in terms of how you come up with your own costume if you could do it on your own. Is Lauren a do it yourself? Do you do it yourself or you do it?
That's my question.
I did make my costume last year.
What was it last year?
I was the Jim Carrey version of the Riddler from Batman with the white and green latex outfit.
Oh, that's a great
the
costume.
The white and green latex outfit. Now, did you go to the latex store for that? Where do you get the latex?
No, Amazon has like these body suits. I guess latex is not the right fabric or whatever you'd call it. It was like almost like a nylon spandex type thingy.
Uh-huh.
But they have them in like every color. So I just bought a white one and bought paint. And made the question marks all over it. And then painted my face and spray painted my hair that crazy pink.
That's a fun costume. Wow.
Thank you. I was proud.
Wow.
What are you doing this year? Do you know?
I have an idea. I haven't fully committed to it.
Okay.
But it's a secret.
The Joker?
No.
I wonder if we'll see any Joker costumes out there.
Oh, I'm sure we'll see a bunch.
Probably the heavy favorite.
Do you remember when the other Joker came out, when it was Heath Ledger? Everyone was the Joker that year.
I was just being told, we apparently have some Hollywood makeup artists coming in to make you up tomorrow.
Oh, yeah, that's
right. For this video that they're going to be doing for something.
I'm very excited.
Ooh.
Around everything's a video around here now. I thought it was a radio station. And the next thing you know, everything's on camera.
Welcome to 2019. Oh, wait, it's almost 2020.
All right, so the other things that you need to know about Halloween.
Okay.
42% of shoppers who are going to a store will go to a discount store. 36% will go to a specialty store, which means it'll be more expensive, right?
Yeah, probably longer lines, too.
And then 25% go to the grocery store. Now, that's just giving up. That, you know what that is? That is just, that. What is the point?
Well,
what are you going to get? I know they've got the costume. It's like at like a Walgreens, especially. That's like the last moment.
When
right?
you have like, no idea what you're doing and you just pick something up. But you can always add to them. You know, you can kind of customize them with a wig or makeup and the rest of that stuff. And you can make them look pretty good, I think.
All right. So children, here are your top in descending order. Princess.
Hmm. That's huge.
I'm going to go with that.
It's very broad.
Which one, though?
Yeah.
I mean, oh my gosh.
Well, that's
that
the thing.
Does not narrow it down.
So, princess, superhero, Spider-Man, Avengers character, excluding Spider-Man, too soon because of that whole fight that they were having about that. Batman, witch, ghost, vampire, Elsa and or Anna.
Yeah.
What's the difference?
Anna.
Do we know Anna and
They're
Elsa?
They're sisters.
Anna
has the red hair. Elsa is the frozen queen with the blonde hair.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. She can let it go.
She can use snow with her hands or whatever that is.
But you can't do that in a costume. It's a costume. I don't know. Could you go
Didn't
into
you
this?
Ever have an imagination when you were a kid?
No. And a pirate is it? Is the for the kids? All right. Here's the adults. Here we go.
Okay. Most popular costumes.
Yes, and you got to put sexy in front of them.
Yes, you do.
Witch. Vampire.
That one always scared me.
The vampire one?
I'm like, you're getting a little too into it. There's blood on her chin. And like, what's going on here?
They got some legit teeth these days, too. You just, like, put wax in them.
Okay, that just went from sexy to creepy.
Ow, 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 ow. That's my tongue. That's my tongue.
Pretty much.
Superhero. Pirate. Because, you know, guys like to just do the pirate voice. Zombie. I don't know.
Same thing with the vampire.
That, you know, that to me, that's just like, that's phoning it in, being a zombie. Ghost, 2%.
How do you go as a ghost?
Yeah, that takes some effort, you could get creative with it.
Avengers character, excluding Superman. Spider-Man, of course, because of the legal situation. Princess. Cat. All right.
The cat's number one, I swear, on college campuses. 90% of the girls were a cat. They wore some sexy black outfit and put a little black dot on their nose.
Yeah.
It's easy.
Right.
Get some ears.
You got black outfits, right. You know. You just go ahead.
That also allows you to go on the front lawn and pee. That's the other part of that. And then Spider-Man. And then pets. Here are the top things that you're dressing your pet up as.
Okay.
You got pumpkin, hot dog.
Cute.
Superhero, bumblebee, cat, witch, lion, dog. Now, what is the point of that? It's already a dog.
Maybe like a different breed.
Or
you dress the golden doodle like a husky or something, or...
Yeah, maybe. Or you maybe make the cat into a dog. And that would really tick off the cat, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I've been spending my whole
because
life.
They would know.
My whole life avoiding this. And then devil and shark. There you are.
Devil's big, too.
Lauren, thank you for participating. What's going on the roadways? Last check. All right. We have returned. And we have got Justin Coffin in the studio with
us. Yes, we do.
He's the man of the hour right now.
How's it going?
He's the man of the 7 o'clock hour.
Man of the 7 o'clock. Man of the hour.
Exactly.
Next hour, not now.
What's your favorite Halloween candy?
Hold on. David Jennings coming up with the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.
Think about it. We'll ask you later.
All right. Okay. No, go ahead.
Oh, you can ask you now.
You know, I just had a Heath bar, so I think my favorite. Yeah, I think my favorite candy is the last one that I had.
You like them all.
Yeah, and I usually am not one to pick through the candy when
the kids
my son brings them home. But I will also be, I'm the non-chocolate dad. So I might
gummies.
Well, he'll be all over the chocolate.
Gobstoppers.
My wife will be all over the chocolate, but I'm the guy like, that rainbow tropical Twizzler, I'll take it.
You know, I think that the gummy bear has become a very dangerous item in the house.
Yes. Very confusing. Not all of them are intended for the baby.
You're going for the new razor blade.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I'm fearing that, especially now, maybe not this year, but next year for sure in Illinois, we're gonna have some troubles. We're gonna have some troubles with a gummy bear.
I saw somebody on Twitter put up about Thanksgiving food. Beware of casseroles. The idea that they can put THC and marijuana now in green bean casseroles.
Well, you can put it in anything, right?
I know, but the point being that you need to be prepared for anything, Ro. It's a new world order. They can put marijuana anywhere.
Dude, I would love to do that at my Thanksgiving. I'd love to see what happens with my family. It's already a poop show. I could not imagine what it would be like with all of them totally rocked. That would be something.
I have some stoner friends who do like a Friendsgiving, but it's all, everything's laced with...
Yeah. Ugh. Well, Friendsgiving. That, okay, you get that.
But everyone knows, Kevin,
yeah,
going
they're
in.
Like, yeah,
like this is
like
all
friends.
We got stuff.
Awful.
Special brownies.
I know. I'm like, I'm good. And I'm busy that night.
My mom will start to hallucinate and then admit to me that she had an affair with Richard Nixon. It'll be something like that. Something will happen, and I'll be like, oh, no, don't tell me that.
As opposed to now, where everyone just gets sauced. And everyone just
right.
It's
well, they get angry.
Liquor, they get angry.
But they get sauced, they get angry, yeah. They get indignant, they get all the things that you're supposed to get when you're drunk.
Supposed to get.
Yeah. Now, when,
Thanksgiving tradition.
Right. Now, when I just feel like there's a whole other world now in the whole cannabinoid.
Maybe it'll open it up. Maybe it'll open it up. Maybe the Khan family will find new emotions.
Right.
With a
big peaceful moment. You'll just hold hands. Yeah.
There has never been an emotion invented that the Khan family did not express at Thanksgiving.
That is a problem. Very expressive family. We have one, too.
Yeah. There's tens of thousands of personalities at a table of five people.
Yeah. So beware this Halloween season for laced candy.
Right.
Watch out for the gummy bears.
No, you know, no one will do that. No one will actually do that because it costs money. Right? The gummy bears cost money. You don't give that away. You're not,
I don't know. You never know. There's always somebody who wants to do a trick. Or the kids get confused and they go into the wrong cabinet. That's what could happen. All right. We'll see you coming up after the news at the top of the hour. Stay tuned. Extension 720 after David Jennings and the